And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear here and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, streaming Phoenix of the Dock. Yeah, you missed that one. You didn't see me when I did it on the video. Okay, what we're going to do today is we have really good shoes starting off the week again. We're filling up already. John Ferguson's in studio. He's going to help us out, understand what's going on with Made Safe and the Safe Network and up. Dates on that and some other stuff that he's working on, and we're just going to get caught up, you know, because he's been on before and he pays attention to that, and I just say, we're getting close. You know, I want to know. A lot of my decisions, a lot of things that we're doing is based on this tech, and it's a lot of things that we're doing to get our back end ready on Freedom's Phoenix and so on, and finally, we're working on social networking and integrating the site with a lot of the blah, 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 blah. Because I'm just in time for our disappearance. We're just going to go, hey, everybody, yeah, oh, yeah, we get on social. Because they dial it. They turn it up and down and kind of you can and you can't. And you did it right and wrong and you're not allowed and supposed to. And kind of, you know, it's controlled. There's one thing that we started working on. It's called YouTube Heroes. YouTube Heroes gives individuals of the right philosophical bent to go through and flag, and not just flag certain videos, but also flag channels. No, it's better than that. Not just go and flag channels, they can flag multiple channels, like mass flag. They have a whole dashboard, and they go, and I don't like that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy, and you get promoted, and you get points, and you're part of the YouTube hero community to be able to censor. They go, hey, man, it wasn't us. It was our heroes. Hero. You know, it must be government. It's always the opposite of whatever the heck they call it. So they do a thing with Twitter now. It's called shadow banning, to where we had the national chair of the Libertarian Party on, Nick Sarwark, and he goes, yeah, we caught him shadow banning us, and we had him turn it off. I go, the what? And he goes, now, here's national chair of the Libertarian Party, and they go, boom, you're shadow banned on Twitter. And I go, what the hell does that even mean? What it is that only those that are subscribers can see your post. No one else can go to your channel. They can't see it. And it's not promoted. You can't get new subscribers unless you... I mean, it's some weird thing going on. You know, it's for people like, you know, Trump. Hey, he's Twittering too much. He's changing the world. Not allowed. Damn it. Damn internet. Can't have them doing what, you know, they want to. So this is, you know, it's just, yeah, I've been screaming about this forever, and everybody's going, oh, man, what are you, clairvoyant, Ernie? No, I just know that they're bad, and they'll do any and everything they can, you know, to maintain, enhance, expand their power over the individual to benefit them. I don't know. Can they? Well, then they are, and they sure as hell want to. So now is the time for us to... If we were to go and make a big deal out of social network for Freedom's Phoenix, they'll do the same thing that they've done always. You could see the algorithm changed, and it's on certain... And I paid attention. You know, we had our own tracking, internal... So these are things that I watch. A lot of people, they just go, hey, man, look, I put up these graphics, and I got... You know, I've seen... And rattle off a bunch of names of how they were so impressed with social networking, and then they got dependent on it, and then they... found out that their friends weren't their friends, they were Zuckerberg's. And then you're not allowed to communicate. You got their emails, well, then you don't got them. You know, you just supplied a whole bunch of metadata for somebody to whatever. So I think we got a limited time. I get it all. I mean, I sit here and tell them, hello, this is what we're going to do. But they don't pay attention to me. I'm nobody. So I'm just going, what we're going to do is we're just going to go ahead and get everything ready and then, bam, blast it before they can tune it down. And you get, I don't know what, a day, a week, a month, a year or something. But when it happens, it's going to be, and, hey, everybody, I got your attention over here. Everybody, you listening? Everybody, and we're over here now. And I have to be able to do that at a certain time to get the maximum use out of a different concept of computing. It is decentralization. And I'm really, if I can, you know, I got things like defendingarchimedes.com and leavemealonezone.com and that kind of stuff. It's all around one thing, decentralization. Their biggest, you know, they, them, those, Hydra, you know, Dr. Evil, whoever. I mean, you know, the bad guys, they always collectivize everything. They think collectively. And that's their biggest weakness. And we have to not, you know, come together so we can beat their come togetherness. I mean, you know, no. I am, you know, we need to be decentralized. Voluntary, temporary, overlapping interest of everybody gets a kind of a, you know, breathing organism as the way the internet and just human communication should be. It's just, you know, there. There's no agenda other than the agenda of you get to have your own agenda. You know, what's the plan? I don't know. You get to have your plan. I get my plan. We can go plan our own maybe plan. It's called the free market. So this is where why I wanted to talk to John, because we're getting very close to this kind of communication and a decentralization of life in general. You know, do you got enough solar to power your bathroom light? Huh? Do you? Laptop, something? You know, do you got enough food to, you know, to see you through for a little bit and maybe grow your own tomato plant? A couple chickens? Huh? Do you decentralize a little bit like that? You know, you get a little water or something, purify your own water. What are some needs? Some communication, decentralization in your communication. You got more than just your cell phone? You got some smoke signals, ham radio, you know, something, you know, Morse code. I mean, you know, just decentralization. So this is why I wanted to talk to John. When we come back, we're going to get into a lot of stuff. But first, I just want to introduce you to John real quick before we end the segment. Now, John first heard about Made Safe and the Safe Network from interviews that I did here on Freedom's Phoenix. You know, that's kind of what got him started. And since then, he's immersed himself in finding out about and contributing in whatever ways he can towards the launch of the SAFE Network, which is the Made Safe Network for doing what it does. While he has clearly seen the implications of what the SAFE Network can mean for the progress of culture and freedom, he has a very limited technical background. Yay! He understands the concept of Grandma Adjust Button. That's good. He's recently launched the Crossroads of Project Safe. The Crossroads of Project Safe at www.safecrossroads.net, which carries the first podcast dedicated exclusively to the technology, application, news, ideas, and people surrounding the Safe Network. The site also publishes articles and news and hopes to be a true crossroads for others to contribute content regarding Project Safe. He dubs himself the simpleton of Project Safe because we can't all be geeks, but we will still need to know. Somebody's got to ask the right questions. Man, I'm hip to that. So what we're talking, it's madesafe.net, madesafe.net, madesafe. What, and then, of course, he's got safecrossroads.net, well, and then there's a forum.safenetwork.io. I want to get
no,
all
that's
that
actually,
in.
No, that's actually changed. That was an old intro, but that is generally true. It's actually safenetforum.org at this point.
Safenetforum.org.
But anyway.
Well, this is, you know, it's a good intro into, you know, your interest in what you've been doing. When we come back, I want to make sure that, you know, we get your motivations for doing it, what you see is happening, and how close we are. And because you're on the forums and talking to these guys and stuff, I need to get, you know, why they're doing it, what their philosophical bent is. They're like, yeah, man, this is great. We can what? Silk Road, you know? Or, you know, or you know, we can date, you know, or we can get, you know, and new tires for a car or something at a discount. I mean, you know, what is their motivation?
What do you do with air, Ernie? You breathe it. What do you do with communication? You do it. You don't need anybody else choking you out.
All right. Well, we're going to find out what their motivation and why when we get back.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
John Ferguson's going to explain it to us. SafeCrossroads.net on the MadeSafe.net, M-A-I-D, safe.net network. Okay, this is, you understood my motivation and explanation why and what for, but you tell me. SafeNetForum.org. If I was to go on there and start participating in the forum, because I talk to Derek, our IT guy, and I go, Derek, man, you got to, you know, let me know what's going on. Yeah, I went, yeah, okay, they're doing a little, yeah, but they're not quite ready for it. And we get, because this is what happens. Which way do you look for the rising of the sun? Oh, which way? I don't know what's going to come up in the east. I'm going over there, and, oh, I can see the dawn kind of, it's getting, it's lighter over there than it is over there.
Right.
And then you're looking, you're kind of, okay, well, we need this 180-degree thing here, and it kind of gets to a 90, and it gets down, and then all of a sudden, ping, the sun is right there on this mountain peak of the horizon of there it is. And, you know, as you're getting ready, you can kind of get your software kind of developed, you know, to be, like your solar panels are facing the right direction.
I right,
mean, you know,
right.
And then you kind of get it dialed in as it peaks. So we're getting to that point to where it's just starting to break the horizon,
right?
And you're getting data going, you know, back and forth, and they're testing stuff. And I'm going, okay, is now the time for me to look? And if I go and start, cause I got a lot of stuff to do. I'm not going to be contributing code, okay?
Absolutely.
So if I, you know, spend some time on the forum and I make my express myself, and you know, where's my grandma adjust button kind of thing,
right? Right.
You know, if I do that. Is now the time? Is it starting to develop to the point the nuances of?
It depends on who you are. Like, to go on with your analogy, people like me have been looking past, you've been kind of viewing over the horizon, seeing the things, well, oh, there's something coming. Right now, I feel like, you know, we're starting to, and actually, I came on prematurely, what, last year or something, saying, hey, you know, developers start looking. Well, yeah, I mean, you could if you have that long a view. Right now, the network is, the technology is developing, and it's forward to the point where actual application program interfaces are instituted, they're being solidified, and you can check them against a network that is actually up and functioning.
Really?
Well, there's two aspects to the software. There's the Vault software that everybody contributes or that is going to end up running on everybody's computer that makes the backbone of the network, the communications, the vaults, the storage, and so forth. That's going to run on everybody's computer, and we have had test nets of doing that, but currently...
You need to go right into the microphone.
Currently, they're running a set of vaults on servers so that... There's a stable network to develop against with the client software. That's the client software is what you and I are going to use to interact with the network and communicate.
Okay, so what you're saying is there are people now that they can use the network as it is up right now to test applications for the network.
Exactly, and there are tutorial applications that have been designed specifically for developers to like one of the first one was an email application. It's really simple, straightforward, and it definitely needs to be developed out, but it interacts with the network in order to send emails. And then a developer can use that to step off from in developing other applications.
Okay, now this is one thing that, you know, the internet did from the beginning. It was, wow, I can, like, type into this thing and hit send, and people around the world can almost instantaneously get, or even later that day, or whatever.
Right, right.
With BBS, the bulletin board networks, I'd have to, you know, log in or something. But it was, so when it came with ISPs, you were, like, always logged in once it went into service providers that you didn't have to dial up to get a modem.
Exactly.
This was a big, giant advantage for a lot of things, but it also made a central point of we know what you're doing, you know?
You're right.
And as young activists, we're going, yeah, now we can see where this goes, you know? But so I'm looking at, they have a backbone now that they can start doing applications such as, keep in mind, when we first got our first email accounts, it was the end of 93. I did. Now, other people had. Some of the geek guys, they've been doing it for a couple of years already.
Right.
And when did you get your first email?
Oh, I don't know. Probably around 2000. Or no, it was a little earlier, 98. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I was off. I was off in the weeds someplace, not paying attention.
Being somebody, okay. Well, so for us, for activists, I'm going, oh, I see where this goes. And then development of Freedom's Fiend, what can be done, and that kind of thing. But we also were concerned about surveillance and control. And I tell you when it really first hit me was with the very first time you started getting notices that they were challenging copyright or something on YouTube.
Right.
And it was early on. I mean, it was certainly by the time Google took them, man, it was full-blown screw with you. And you had LimeWire and Napster and all this file sharing of music, which was the first thing to go. And then the man trying to shut that down, and Clipper Chip, and then on and on and on. So I'm just going, and their war on encryption and all that. I go, what the hell do they care? Oh, you're not allowed to be private. Oh. Well, they just reared their little head and showed their cards, didn't they, you know? So what was going to stop them? You know, it was just going to be, had to be a decentralized, leave me aloneist, you can't find me, I'm not there. And so we waited for it to become a problem, knowing it was going to be a problem, screaming that, then it's a problem. So I'm looking at the ability to replicate a lot of the things that the internet has developed, like Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, you know,
all
on and on.
Things, all those things are there, or will be there.
Okay, see, that's
the backbone is right there.
So that's what they've been working on, is the backbone to allow for that.
Yeah,
then the people that want to be that, go make it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Let me give you a real brief nutshell of where things are at. There are two stacks of software that make up the safe network. There's the Vault software. That's what everybody's going to download and run on their machines that will do the network's business.
Okay, let's explain it real quick. How it would work is not like servers that it is now, where you got everything somewhere, or even Google that is, you know, cached the entire internet. Because when you're doing a search engine, you're not searching the internet; you're searching their copy of the internet.
Exactly.
You know, it's kind of categorized and makes it, and that's, you know, what they do. So the safe network, you're on the way it used to be. It's kind of like a bulletin boards on steroids, and you have your own hard drive, and you participate in the network by supplying all the stuff that you want uploaded,
right.
And you allow your hard drive to receive pieces of files from all over the world.
And you're paying for bandwidth to do that, to do all those actions as well.
Yeah. That's encrypted, so that if the NSA came and took your hard drive, you got an external hard drive here, they take it. All they're getting is pieces of files and encrypted. There's nothing for them to do with it.
Exactly.
The protocol combines whenever you make a request of something, pulls out all the pieces. It's kind of like a Napster peer-to-peer thing.
BitTorrent,
so,
yeah.
So that is a, in a nutshell, there's really nowhere to go, because even the pieces are replicated in other hard drives of pieces, so it's
exactly.
All, everything's there. That is a unique, interesting, and is it software or hardware that allows that? We didn't have that before.
It's the software. It's the software that allows that.
Okay. So we understand that. Now I want to talk about, when we come back, we kind of got an idea why we need it, kind of what it is. Now I want to see how far we've gotten along and what applications are coming on. You know, you're talking about, we have a first email. Well, that's where it starts. You know, it's always, can I send my, oh, you did a cryptocurrency Bitcoin thing on
yes,
our.
Yes, that's
right.
I wanted to talk about that.
I forgot about it. Oh, we'll tell you everything.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Yeah, where's my gigablast? My billion freaking megabyte per second download upload of, I got my artificial intelligence Jeeves doing my crap on the internet from the cloud of my assistant something. And what we're looking at here is I'm doing these speed tests, and of course you do it through Cox, and it's, oh yeah, man, you know, we're 5x5, man, you're doing good. As we do this, and you're seeing the computers here as we're testing it, what happens is you start to find out that the problem is that the Linux computer is the faster one. It's not because the card's faster and slow. I mean, because I'm getting on these others, it'll go from 15, you know, megabytes per second download to, you know, like 7 up and all that. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Well, come to find out is that there's nodes that it goes through, and it's where it, you know, and Cox will, hey, man, it's not our problem. You know, Cox, it's a contract we have with different people. If you're kind of in, then it goes to this node, and you know, we're supplying the fast. See, if you connect to us, it's really fast. You're paying 300 megabytes per second download and 30 upload for a gazillion dollars, but you may only get a fraction of because we contracted with some bad guys that kind of, you know, and they're bad. I do my Linux computer, and for some reason, it connects to a different one, and it goes a lot faster. And I'm going, how the hell would they know what computer I have or what operating system or software, and why would it marry up and handshake with the
what a
surveillance
web.
Yeah, some weird stuff going on. And I go, and it's like, you know, James Bond on his business card has said, yes, I'm a universal exports. You know, it's that kind of, you know, it's one of those deals. It's like one of those places that it connects to. It's called Sharop, you know, share your opinion, and it's all in Spanish. And it's kind of, I'm like, what the hell are they doing? So when I had the Cox guys, they're shining you on and all of this and see, and I'm going, explain to me how it is on these computers through the same router and everything always connects to this one and this one doesn't. I'm wondering, somebody, I just want to know. I just want to have it explained to me. Well, they don't know. They just, you'll say some BS, you know. They go, blah, 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 blah. So I'm going, there is some, I need a safe network. You know, I need to, I just don't care. They don't even know I'm there. I can do it. This is the reasons why. And they go, hey, you're a tinfoil Ernie. Man, I'm not blind. I can sit here and look at it. I can see what's happening. They're sucking all the goody out. Or they, you know, I have my computers being, you know, they're on, you know.
They got their fingers in my pie, by golly.
Yeah, you know, this has been my thing. I go, you know, I don't care. They want to surveil. That's fine. You know, their little AI gets converted. You know, the agents, you know, watch every 2 weeks, you got to change them because we convert them, you know, right, with philosophy or whatever. So I don't care. Gosh darn it, you better let me have access to what I want to do and how fast I want. You want to sit there and watch me? Pace. I want to be all secret. I'll go be secret somewhere. But if I'm going to be using, I will allow you to give me my daily anal probe, you know, continuous anal probe. It is like I'm getting high colonic, you know, the entire time. But gosh darn it, I get to watch TV or do my thing, or so I get to use it. If I can't, then why am I here? I need something else. Oh, I can go faster. Oh, and be left alone? Screw you. So I need to know the different applications that are coming on. Monologue me, man. Fill me up.
Well, all right. So there are a couple things to cover. First of all, just for everybody, the easiest way to look at this is the crowdsourced internet. This is the internet that's put there, not by appealing to central companies that run all these machines and servers, but hooking together all the fantastic amount of resources that we have on our in our pockets, on our desks, in our laptops, and so forth. To be able to have all of the things and more that the current internet is doing. Now, as I was saying before, there are two stacks. There's there's a software that hooks all those computers together and integrates them, like communicating into the mist. You store a file, it gets chopped up in little pieces and goes out. You call it back, it comes back zipped from all sorts of different places, and nobody knows what it is but you, and if you're communicating with somebody else, those are the only two people that can know. That stack of software is the vaults that is currently the community has run test networks. Oh, by the way, I got to do a disclaimer. I am not an employee of MadeSafe. I'm a community member, and while they generally approve of what I have to say, I'm not responsible to MadeSafe. But the test networks have been running amongst just resources that people are providing. Currently, they're hosting the whole vault network on a server so that the client software, that's the other stack that we all are going to use, that we all do use to communicate with, to do our business. Now, the vaults are going to be distributed eventually, but right now they're holding that stable so that developers can use the programming, the application program interfaces, to start developing the applications, which really make the meaning and give actually also earns the application developers money from the network in the form of SafeCoin.
Okay, that's another thing. There's a financial incentive for participating. And that's one thing that I was, you know, with the, I go, look, man, I got 15 gazillion computers that just sit here, you know, doing nothing, you know, the majority of the 24 hours. And I'm like, man, can I be mining information and having safe? I want my internet speed up.
What's the motivation to run the software on your computer aside from using the network? Well, you get to earn resources back from the network, from the value created by all these computers hooking together, and that's SafeCoin.
You know, that's another thing. In the cryptocurrency, they all convert, you know, into Bitcoin if you want on the exchanges and everything. And Bitcoin just took a jump. It's $634 now.
Yeah.
And it was 603 or something there for a long time. All of a sudden, and we're more. Well, silver's down to 1760.
I know.
So what am I looking at? I bought a bunch of Bitcoin with silver when it was 16 ounces per Bitcoin. Now it's 36 ounces per Bitcoin. So wow. I'm going, that's like more.
Mm-hmm.
So I go, you know, man, if you're trading and it's time to buy some silver and you should have already bought some Bitcoin. And the communication of just value and being able to trade on the internet for anything and do it privately, because I probably get the majority of my, other than groceries, I think probably, Don, what would you say our percentage of shopping comes from online, Amazon or Purse or whatever the hell? A lot. You know, a lot. You know, we're constantly getting on, you know, whatever stuff I need or I want to buy, you know, UPS man shows up. And I'm going, very cool. Yeah. It's a lot. So I'd like to do that securely, secretly, and none of their damn business.
Right. Well, that's the design of SafeCoin. But also, you mentioned that Bitcoin transaction that I was going to talk about. Let me lay the groundwork here. The 1 minute? Okay. Well, anyway, so we have tutorial applications, including this email application and comment sections for websites. That's another one. They're rolling out about every 2 weeks. And on that email application allows you right now on the network as it exists to communicate completely privately. Now, anyway, we'll talk about what it does and doesn't do, but I was completely secure in making a very cool transaction.
Okay, secure from where to where? I mean, decrypted on your computer?
Yep. Yep. It was like there was no way for even the MadeSafe, who's hosting all of those nodes, to know, to be able to figure out what was communicated. Now, when those nodes are decentralized on everybody's desktop, there's no way of knowing where it came from and where it's going to.
So you were able to do a Bitcoin transaction on the Safe network
by somebody who appreciated the work I'd been doing, sending me the private key to a Bitcoin address that contained the money he wanted to give me.
On the
Safe network.
So you just like in the open. Yeah. I just entered it in
and sent it to me. It's like we felt completely secure in doing that transaction.
So now, there was no transaction. It was just he sent you that number.
Exactly.
And then you got in your email in the open these numbers and you just
and
went
I
up.
Took and I changed it on the Bitcoin network. But that was more significant than I even thought at the moment. And we'll talk about that
when we come back, man. It's already going.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. Yes,
I'm covering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what we do here. Okay, so this segment, in the first one, kind of understand, you know, what's going on, why I'm important in this future, and here we're going. And we got email and stuff that's already started. There's some applications. There's a forum to go to. It's safenetforum.org. They're starting to actually, you know, use the network for different things. And John Ferguson, in studio guest, is and he comes to the debate parties and some of the parties and everything. We had the debate, you know, we didn't even talk about that. But What happened was, is he got interested in this and started, you know, what can I do to contribute and talk about and be the layman of somebody to be cheerleader of and keep track for and kind of help Ernie. Well, now we're starting to have where they're in the open sending the encryption code for private key of Bitcoin and done. And I'm going, really? You're feeling that comfortable.
The neat thing about that was it's dead easy. You know, the whole idea of the safe network is privacy, security, and freedom by default. Now, these are still test networks. They go up and down. But and there, we've got a lot I'd like to touch on. I think we've got... That was
now.
A very significant thing. I realized, hey, we just transferred this Bitcoin value just right over the network, and we weren't worried about it. So that really means that that level is solid. Now, the pretty soon they're evolving the final things that basically have to do with running computers, the vaults on computers with different resource capacities. If you got a bunch of computers that aren't capable, as capable as others, how do you sort that out? That is in its final stages. We'll see those released soon. But MadeSafe is really, as a company, the development cycle is really clean. You can follow it on GitHub and these other open
source. Inspire the guys to want to. Tell me the stuff that they've got going on.
That's what I'm about to say here. So we're building the team. Oh, I want to mention the Bank to the Future Equity crowd, actually not crowd, say the equity fundraising, which if you're interested, go to banktothefuture.com and check that out. It's expiring in less than 24 hours if you want to participate. But MadeSafe has also entered a joint venture with a Hong Kong company to be basically MadeSafe Asia. The details of that, we don't have a lot, but they've invested a bunch in the equity of MadeSafe as well. So there's things going forward. Glasgow University, a very ancient and wonderful university, has a computer science department where the students are now engaging in learning the underlying technology of MadeSafe and starting to develop applications for the network. That's actually all huge forward progress. Let me see. So
here I'm looking at here. I like the goals of Bank to the Future, where everything is transparent and people can see what happens with their money. It is great that they are offering support to entrepreneurs and businesses who will create jobs in the future, Sir Richard Branson. And I'm going, okay. And what the hell? So there are $103 million invested already. Explain this to me. What the hell does this have to do with SAFE?
What, the Bank to the Future? Well,
yeah.
it's a equity. It's raising funds for equity in MadeSafe. In other words, rather than like a crowd sale where you buy cryptocurrency.
Are they using it as like a Kickstarter thing? Or
yeah, well, it's a fundraising round to, if people with usually lesser means, you self-qualify as an investor, and you can go in and get involved in actually having a piece of the equity of MadeSafe, which is going to be fantastic as the network comes forward.
Portfolio investments include BitPay, Kraken, Storage, Bitcoin, BitPesa, Shapeshift, Ethereum. So these are, is your company?
Those are all, MadeSafe's in there as well. Those are all projects where is either done or in progress. And
MadeSafe's raised, they got 18, they already at 2 million. So how much are they? A lot. So this is like a crowdsource funding for
It's ability for the regular people to get a piece of equity rather than having to be a qualified investor.
Okay, you got to help me out here. I need to understand this. BankToTheFuture.com, and it'll go to it, but it's BNK instead of BANK, but BANK goes
either
to
way
it.
We'll get there, yeah.
So it goes, I want to view pitches. I am from the United States. I am not. If you're from the United States, you're not allowed to look at other stuff. See, that's another thing.
Yeah, you can go check that. Anyway, I don't want to make a big deal out of that, though.
Well, I just want to see if it's a crowd source funding. So it's kind of like a Kickstarter for these kind of banking to the future. It's not part of Mainstream.
No, no, not at all. It's, okay, I'm mentioning that is an opportunity to invest in MadeSafe, the company, because I did a podcast with Nick Lambert, the chief operating officer. If you go to safecrossroads.net, you can find out about it, where we talked about, MadeSafe's open source, it's community. Why would somebody want to invest in the company? Because actually, and we go into great detail why the company, once this network is up and running, is going to be fantastically profitable. But I don't want to go into those details. But the main thing is it's going to be profitable because the network is going to be success and nobody will have to deal directly. But there are commercial licensing opportunities and so forth. So,
okay, the minimum to invest in any in this, it's $951 or 768 pounds, British pounds. So there is a minimum to be able to get your, but fortunately.
Yeah, but that's reachable by a lot more people.
Yeah, if you're big, if you're Richard Branson, I do many times that. But I've already got a bunch of MadeSafe from the beginning, but there were the, I don't even know what the
Well, you
heck
got
it
the
was.
MadeSafe coin, which is going to be converted to SafeCoin. This is different. That's crowd sale where you buy a cryptocurrency. This is equity.
Okay, in the actual company.
In the actual company. And that's just a side thing. We don't need to spend too much time on that just to alert people that they might want to go on with it. The main.
Go, man, right, go. Beard. You got 2 minutes. Go.
Okay. Well,
I keep talking to fill space, man. You got to go.
I know. Okay. Well, I've covered most of what's there. Go to safenetwork.org and find links to everything about MadeSafe, the company, the community, the forum. These tutorial applications and the documents supporting them are all also linked through documents under safenetwork.org. This is kind of a reach out to developers.
Okay,
you're not going to make a ton of money right now, but you'll want to find out about this technology.
Yeah, no,
it's going to change everything.
It's like investing in some breakout technology. If I got Bitcoin at 30 cents a piece, now it's 6:30, whatever.
But as a developer, you want to have an advantage.
But when you say the tutorial, there's the tutorial. What are you talking about? Tutorial of what?
Well, that's like the email tutorial application. Here's a simple email program that interfaces you with the program, gives you the tools you need as a developer to go, I see how this works. Oh, I can tweak that and improve it. And you can then develop
for
an entire...
developers using the Safe Network.
Exactly. Okay. People like me just use that app and say, oh, that's really cool. There's nothing more I can do with it other than use what's presented to me. But a developer can go, oh, I see how this works. Consult the documentation.
How big is the developing community on this? Because I remember when they first got their first crowdsourcing, they raised like $7 million in 5 days. And then all of a sudden, boom, they had 200 developers on it, a bunch of them all over the world, China, So what are they at now? What's the community size?
I actually don't have that statistic at all. But there's definitely more. There's the MadeSafe is bringing on actual staff and developers and outreach people. Oh, yeah, I've been hiring and building the team.
Well, the founder, David Irvine, we just had on probably like a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
And because they had done, I heard that they had done their first test network when Alpha, the developers,
started doing it.
And when they did that, I'm going, ew, time to talk to him. And he goes, yep, time to talk.
Yep.
It's
still out there on the horizon when it's going to actually go live. I think MadeSafe and I learned not to make the predictions of, it's going to be out imminent, because, hey, things happen. But real progress is there. And I see it. I see it definitely. I'd be surprised if it's fully blown, fully live in less than 6 months. And I'd also be completely shocked if it's not fully up within 9 months or a year. So
really,
that's my
personal
overview.
So within a year, we're going to be free by the election cycle of 18. We're going to be able to add.
You know what?
We're done.
I hate. That's just my gut at this moment. I don't speak for MadeSafe.
Can the planet be free by like say 2020?
Planet is free right now. It's all in your mind.
That's right. The revolution between the ears. All right. We'll go to the archive. We're going to keep yakking it through up until our next guest, because we have Lawrence Reed. Yeah, from Fee, the head guy in charge of Fee. FEE.org. Go check them out, man. You'll see why it's going to be important. Okay. So let me just ask some questions
here.
Sure. When you're talking on, how often are you on the forum just yakking with these guys?
Oh, I'm on every day.
Okay. So the conversation is what?
There's all sorts of conversations about, you know, because there's also a developer forum for the nuts and bolts, and I don't go there very much because it gets over my head in terms of the minutiae of the technical interactions. I understand it pretty well from a high level.
Yeah, I've done I just a whole need the philosophy. School. See, this is my thing. This is my question. This is what I want to know. I go on there, and would I be welcome? They go, hey, yeah,
absolutely.
We know about Ernie. Yeah, Ernie, come on, peace.
Anybody's welcome. You come on, you want to find out, you ask a question. See, I don't know where to start. People will nudge you in the right direction.
I don't,
search this.
Let me tell you what my question is. This is my question.
Sure.
I go on, and I go, you know what? Blah, 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 blah. Am I going to be able to communicate ones and zeros with the planet securely, uncensored? They don't know, and it's forever and always a file is there that I can link to on Freedom's Phoenix on my worldwide webpage.
Right.
That I have a link that they can go and grandma just button on her browser and click that link and goes, and it's forever and never change, and it's there and always.
That's a coming. Yep.
So now I tell you why that's important for 15 billion reasons, but I just give you a recent example. We had the vaccine education summit thing.
Yep.
And there were just horror stories of these young women that were pressured into let's pump my kid through what, and a lot of them it was important to me. I went and looked. I searched. I would find references that I should read this PDF or read this document or go to this page.
And they're not there anymore.
And they're not there anymore.
Exactly.
Because they're targeted. It's like, all the greatest Ron Paul graphics of the statement got it. It's gone.
That will be impossible for those to be gone. When the safe network is up and running, if you have the data, it will be there.
Okay.
If it's been posted and you have
access to it. And how secure am I accessing it?
Completely.
They don't know who I... Because I asked David this.
They don't know who you are. They don't know where you are.
Now, how? I asked David this, Irvine, the founder. I go. If I'm using cocksucker over here doing my crap NSA bidding of,
Right.
Send me a letter
the
and we don't care.
Standard ISP, ever centralized everything.
So
yeah.
When I'm using their transmission lines, the ones and zeros...
How does he get lost? Well, that's been the problem. Even Tor doesn't allow you to do that very well. The safe network, because of the architecture of there is no central point. You don't have to go in and out of any central point. You connect securely and with other nodes on the network, and things are passed. So when you have your own internet protocol address that can identify who you are, that gets scrubbed at the first hop.
Okay, now that's what I wanted
to
hear.
You communicate to another node which knows where you are but doesn't know what you're saying. That's passed on to yet another node who knows, who may or may not know what is in there, but knows to receive it, but doesn't know who or where you are.
Okay, wait a minute. There's two different things. One, it's like you're splitting the message. We can combine the response back to where we know it needs to go,
right?
But the content and that are separate, so they don't combine.
Exactly.
So you can either know what I'm... Well, you don't know what I'm saying because it's encrypted.
A few nodes know that you're there but don't know what you're talking about. Everybody beyond, if somebody at the other end may know what you're talking about, has no way of finding out who or where you are other than what you tell them.
So that software combines it in some way for you to get the message.
I tell you,
how do they keep, once it's combined, keep them from hacking that?
Well, on your own computer, hey, that's a problem we all have, and those are things to be solved. Because, if somebody gets malicious software on your computer that logs your keystrokes, that's a problem. But they can't do that on a mass scale. I mean, it has to be targeted, even if they can do that. Right. Through made safe, in anything.
Well, these are the things. This is my point. If I go on the forum and I start drilling down on this, these guys are able and willing to answer these inquiries.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you right now, one place you can go is to go to safecrossroads.net, hover over the podcast tab at the top, and you'll see a thing pops down that says Safe Network School. That is a series of 10 podcasts where I went scrupulously through the system documents and did a series of podcasts, breaking it down, cracking my head
this one
to make it to try and make it understandable, and did interviews and glossarified. Go to listen to those podcasts, and you'll start to really get the picture. It's a big picture.
Okay, safenetforum.org, right?
Right.
Okay, so I go there, and it's, you know, blah, 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 blah. 62% pass, one from Simon Jim Simpson. Last day made safe, bank the future equity fundraising now live. Welcome to the Safe Tech Forum.
There is much data right there
the
that
forum.
You can
Beginners,
search.
You are new ask. To the Safe Network. Read the Safe Network FAQ. Introduce yourself to this topic. Feel free to create a topic. Contains all the questions that you have. Yada, yada, yada. Okay, let's go to that.
And it's one of the most questions. Embracive communities I've ever seen.
All right, here it is. You can learn about the safe by watching this high-level overview and reading this extensive FAQ, which is hosted on the Safe Network Wiki. Get started. General data storage apps, SafeCoin farming, attacks on the Safe Network, comparison to other technologies, apps, technical, API, miscellaneous. Okay. All right.
There are cross links and everything. Safenetwork.org is a great place to go to poke around. Go to madesafe.net.
Okay, they have a lot of, you know, traffic on for beginners. It says here, how will Safe Network deal with arbitrage? You know, they're already looking at the currency.
Huge discussions on the currency.
Account recovery. What happens when credentials get out? Where's my grandma just button for that? Okay. So this is, this is one thing that a lot of people don't have the understanding or give a lot of deference to this one number. There is one of the BitAngel guys, Michael, I can't remember his name, but he had me, he goes, years ago, I was Bitcoin conference in Texas, and it's called an app for your phone, Zero Block. And what it does, it's a Bitcoin, kind of what the price is. It's at, you know, 633 whatever now. It's up 3% today, I think. And I'm going, damn. But it also says what the average block time is. It says when's the next difficulty, and they make it harder or easier to keep it at that average 10-minute solving the block thing. But it's also the hash rate. So it's right now it's at 1,700 petahashes per second, which a peta is 1,000 gig. I mean,
it's amazing.
Freaking enormous numbers here. This is like the most powerful computer on the planet.
Thermodynamically, you know? Secured, yes.
So this is, and I saw it this last weekend, it had hit 2,000.
Amazing.
2,000 petahead. This is, you know, the self-aware, you know, take over the planet AI computer. It's going to be Bitcoin, you know, or something like this. And this is the power that's coming in the Safe Network. Okay, we got Donna next hour on the video. We're getting our next guest, and, you know, stick around. We'll yak it. Here we go.
Now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear here on Declare Your Independence. I'm here, Ernest Hancock. My very, 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 very special guest. Been too long since we talked to him, Mr. Lawrence Reed. Lawrence Reed from FEE, Foundation for Economic Education. Been around for a long time, long time, long time. He's going to tell us about it. Now, at FEE, it's just a hub for decades. I mean, God, man, like 50-something years. I mean, that's a long time. You know, we have FEE.org, FEE.org. Got a new book coming out, Lawrence Reed, Real Heroes. And, of course, we'll talk about the don't know, there's an election thing going on. We had the, you know, the Trump hit Clinton debate party Sunday, and like, it is too laugh. Anyway, I just couldn't sit still long enough to, you know, I don't care. But the book, Real Heroes, Inspiring True Stories of Courage, Character, and Conviction, this book features profile after profile of people who stood firm for core principles like liberty, free markets, and resistance to government power. And I'm wondering, is that, I don't know, describe Trump or Hillary? I don't think so. But we're going to find out. Lawrence Reed, welcome to the show, Lawrence. Good to talk to you again.
Hey, same here, Ernest. Great to hear your voice.
Okay, this is, and it's good to have you on. I was really inspired by Lawrence. I met him on the road. I think it was Michigan years ago. I was, you know, speaking, and I go, ooh, I want to have you come on. Back when you were with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, it's another freedom advocating organization, and you went to FEE, and I remember hearing your story, and you spoke at our summit and so on, and you're like, you know what? FEE had a big impact on you in the early days of you as a youngin' in the 60s or something. Tell that story and what FEE did for you, and then we'll talk about what's going on.
Okay. Yeah, it was in 1968, when I was only 14 years of age, that I first ran across FEE. I actually went to a Young Americans for Freedom demonstration in downtown Pittsburgh to protest the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia. And can you imagine that at that age? But I was motivated to support people who were fighting for their liberty. And as soon as I joined YAF at that time, they put me on the mailing list of the publications coming from FEE, and I have been a reader ever since. I've served on the board as chairman of the board and in the 1990s, and since 2008, I've been president.
Awesome. Now, that culminated in a book. Is this your first book? You get written a bunch of other books? Or were we talking about books from Lawrence Reed?
This is number 7 or 8, actually.
But really?
It's the one I'm most proud of.
Okay, Real Heroes, Inspiring True Stories of Courage, Character, and Conviction. Give me an idea of what you were trying to do before we get into individual stories, but I mean, you felt the need to do this because why?
I believe strongly in the importance of personal character. I don't think that any society can arise out of the ashes to become a free and prosperous one without character, and I certainly don't think that any society can keep its liberties if it loses its character. And one of the ways to emphasize it, to strengthen it, and to recognize those who have it, is to give stories in print or by word of mouth, of great people who have exemplified character and have, as a result of their actions, left the world a better and freer place. So there are 40 chapters in the book. Each one deals with a different person, going back as far as ancient Roman times right up to the present day.
Really? So, I mean, you've taken what inspired you, I would imagine. You know, you're going, man, this is a good story, and this one, and this one, and this one, and this one, then that's what I'm going to tell? Something like that?
That's right. When I started the project, I made a list of about 25 people that I knew I wanted to write about. But in the end, in the course of research, I uncovered some others. And so there are 40 people focused on in this book. Now, I didn't intend to focus on the really big names that everybody knows, like George Washington, let's say. He would certainly qualify. But I focused, for the most part, on people who deserve to be better known, but for various reasons just aren't as known as they should be.
You know, and how would they even come to your attention? From personal, you knew a story of a heard about of a newspaper article, or what? I mean, how did you find out about them?
Oh, boy, every single one has a little different story. As I say, in the case of a couple dozen or so, they were people that I knew of and knew enough to know that they would likely qualify by my criteria of what a hero is.
We're going to get to in just a second. I'll continue your thought.
Okay. And then just in the course of researching those names and then publishing an occasional piece on them online, other people made suggestions to me, or I uncovered maybe tangentially the name of another person, looked into that one, and decided, wow, that person qualifies as well. So it was an evolving project, but it did start with a core of about 2 dozen that I really wanted to focus on.
Okay, based on what? Let's get to that hero criteria. This person's a hero because he's got an S on his chest and he looks good in spandex? I mean, what?
Well, you know, everybody would regard a person, let's say, who saves a child from a burning building as a hero. There are a lot of those kinds of instances all around us, and I don't want to take anything away from those folks. But I was looking for heroes who actually lived lives of heroism over extended periods of time. People who transformed their lives may have started out in terrible shape and for a number of reasons and turned themselves around. Or in other cases, people who courageously spoke truth to power, who very bravely stood up to the powers that be and spoke the truth as they knew it. People who stood for the right things and mustered the courage to say so. So you have quite a variety here in the book of people like Catherine Athol in Great Britain, who years before the beginning of the Second World War was one of the first people to say, hey, this guy Hitler is going to cause a lot of trouble. And at the with the anger of her own party, she spoke out against both the Nazis in Germany and Stalin in Russia.
And where was she from?
She was from Britain and was a member of Parliament, only the second woman ever to be elected to the British Parliament.
Really?
Yeah.
We got Margaret Thatcher who was Prime Minister, you know, and there's only been, like, one other woman that's been elected to Parliament in England?
Oh, no. No, there have been others, but Catherine Athol was the second woman to be elected to Parliament.
Oh, okay, 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 okay. Yeah. So this is, we're talking 30s here?
20s and 30s, yes.
Okay, now this is, for a lot of people that don't know, I mean, it's easy to say how bad, you know, Hitler is now, but at the time, I mean, he's man of the year on time, and he's the greatest. We got to follow his example of go kick butt, and Ford and a bunch of other guys are giving him money, and IBM are buddies, and we're helping get them damn rascally Jews on the cattle car. I mean, you know, so I'm just, things change, and I'm wondering the traits that you would have of someone coming out and calling BS on this. I mean, was she, you know, all freedom-oriented libertarian, or was it just, I'm wondering, and people are products of their time, and I'm wondering if philosophy entered into it, a hero for the right way of thinking, or there's a other character trait that you were looking at, them just questioning, maybe not this.
Well, in the case of Catherine Athol, I think it was both. Philosophically, she was a committed advocate for liberty. She spoke out against intrusions of big government, both at home and abroad. And in her case, she also had the character virtue of courage. She was willing to speak up and at great risk politically to herself.
Okay, courage, another word we need to define with Lawrence Reed from FEE.org. Go check it out. We'll be right back.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
Hey, Lawrence?
Yes.
What I wanted to do when we come back is, well, you know, some more stories and go, but, you know, the reason and the purpose and the benefit of the book. Now, Donna, you have the Amazon, everything on the archive for the book and all that kind of, she's got all set. I'll send them there and go and get it. But I'm going, all right, so this is, you felt you're proud of this, you wanted to do this, and it's going to have what impact on the next 14-year-old Lawrence Reed now that gets it, and kind of what age bracket is it for and why, and the impact it's going to have, and the world's a better place because of.
Okay.
All right. So, you know, because I want to encourage people to be encouraged by it, but you got to help me sell it, man.
Yeah. Okay.
And the so how are you?
Oh, just great, just great. Been on the road a lot, of these interviews, but it's exciting stuff.
Well, it's how long has it been out?
2 weeks.
Okay, so it's just coming out, and then we're like in the middle of Trump, Hillary, and you're still voting. Read the book.
So, I haven't decided if I'm going to vote myself or not, at least for that top position.
I am just, wow, it is too laugh. You know, so I was outside. I just can't stand it. So I go sit outside while the debate's going on, and then some of the young guys can't. Ernie, come in now. Now's the time. Now, come running, coming now. And I go in, and it's just more yelling crap. I think it was the point where he said, yeah, because you'd be in jail. They're all excited because Trump got, you know, a good zinger in there. And I'm just going, you know, I just can't muster up enough give a crap. I'm glad that he represents people who are just pissed off and, you know, never Hillary. But, you know, we'll get into POTUS, but I want to focus on the book. All right, here we're coming back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
But a song we sing, fears that we will die. You can make the mountains ring or make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing, and you
it's the time, it's the emotion, it's the day. And there's a lot of, and you got to think, you know, Lawrence Reed is 14 years old. The Czech Republic gets invaded by the Soviet, whatever, and he has the presence of mind. And why? No. Well, you know, we saw the same thing a few years ago with, we're going to go bomb Syria. And everybody went, not just no, but hell no. And they held them off for a couple of weeks. I mean, you know, it's you can have an impact on this, and you're inspired by a lot of different things. But a lot of times you just read and you get into the life of other people that demonstrated that they're a hero by the criteria that Lawrence Reed decides that they're a hero. And one of that's just the courage to be a hero. And courage a lot of times is not, you know, it's bravery is not that you did something brave, you did something somebody else wouldn't do. It's like, you know, you're going to run into the wind against the wind, and you do it anyway. And because you go, I'm going to take it. I couldn't live with myself if I didn't do it. So I'm just going to take whatever damage I'm going to do it. So some of the stories in your book, Lawrence, I'm wondering, you know, did they all pay a great price? Were they all, you know, disciples of Jesus? Were they all martyrs in their own, or did they come out ahead, or most? I mean, you know, it doesn't, you don't have to, like, be a martyr, do you?
No, you don't have to. Actually, there are some examples in the book of people who lost their lives for the cause they believed in, but there are others who, you know, ended up just fine in every sense. So, in my mind, a person is a hero if he speaks truth to power, does what he knows is right, regardless of the risks, and in some way or other leaves the world a better and freer place.
Did Ron Paul make it?
No, he didn't, but he certainly is a hero in my book.
You know, this is, and how far back does it go? I mean, what's the most recent individual? Are they, any of them alive, or, you know, what was your criteria?
There are two, maybe three people in the book who are still alive. But all the others are deceased, and they go back as far as ancient Roman times, and lots of people in between, 40 in all.
40. What was the, you know, cutoff? You said, yeah, I think I limit it to 40, or did you, you know, just...
Well, I actually wrote about 55 chapters, and my publisher said, Larry, that's getting kind of long. How about let's make it 40 and keep the others for perhaps a future edition.
Oh, so you already got started on the next one. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. You know, this is, I mean, if, you know, this is the quality that you're dealing with if Ron Paul's not in there. So I'm going, you know, damn, you know, they're all like better than, you know, so I'm wondering what's the criteria?
Well, keep in mind, I had about 9 billion people I could pick from.
I know, so really.
I only had to pick 40. Well, I was looking for people who whose heroism was not momentary, not, you know, like running into a burning building and rescuing a child. I mean, that person is certainly a hero, but I was looking for people whose lives over extended periods of time were lives of heroism. And so every single person in the book is characterized by that. And my hope is that people, when they read this, will find that their spirits are lifted, that they come to realize that, hey, one person can make a difference, that there are values worth fighting for, and that if we really want a free and prosperous and moral society made up of people of solid character, you can't ignore those who live such lives. You got to pull them out of the pages of history, dust them off, and talk about them, and be inspired by them.
Well, inspired to, what, feel better about humanity? Inspired to go do something, to live the life of? The guy? I mean, what do you hope the inspiration is going to do?
All of that. I hope somebody reading this book will say, wow, I'm inspired that a person can leave such a mark for the good. I'm inspired that a person can make a difference and improve the lives of others around him and muster the courage to do what's right. All of those things. I think that's part of focusing on heroes and telling young people in particular that, hey, you don't have to be ordinary, let alone, you know, a negative person. You can be a positive influence on the people around you. You can leave people saying, wow, I'd like to be like that person because he or she is a person of character.
Okay. I give you an example, and I'm sure you're inspired a lot this way, too. You know, I remember, God, I was in high school, so this is like 77, 78, sophomore, junior, or something in high school, and somebody said, you know, you want to know what to do, you know, like, what would Jesus do? Before the what would Jesus do bracelet started, you know, this is, you know, like, you know, a decade and a half, 2 decades before that. And it was, think of someone that you admire that you would want to be like, and then it's like, what would they do? How would they respond to different things? What would be? So to me, I was really at the time, I was, you know, I was a big Thomas Jefferson fan before I got political or anything, and it's all based on the concept that he saw the supremacy and everything that you read. I mean, you don't know. I mean, he had slaves. I mean, you know, but the you saw the rights of the individual as paramount to the collective or the state. And I'm going, that concept that I get the me, that just that one little thing right there, I'm going, yeah, that was the filter by which I did everything. So these people, I'm looking at their political philosophy. Did that enter into it, or was that one of the main criteria, or you're looking for just this courage to challenge power?
Well, there are a few people I focused on in the book whose political philosophy was not really known. And I don't know what they were, but nonetheless, I included them because in other ways they represented the best of humane values, like an Althea Gibson, great tennis star. I don't know where she was on political issues. She just didn't dabble in that sort of thing. But I do know that she was not only a fantastic tennis player, but that she resisted in the most powerful and elegant way things like discrimination. She was a black woman and not allowed to play tennis at some places. And she resisted that and focused on her own talent and I think was a hero, even though I have no idea what her politics was.
You know, but why was she a hero?
Well, because she pulled herself up from poverty. She persevered. She worked hard. She never gave up. She was a magnificent tennis player. She dealt head-on with the discrimination that would have set back other people in that profession. And she was just so elegant in everything that she said and did. She was just a great personal example for lots of people.
You know, this is something that would be you would buy for your teenager, your preteen, junior high, your grandmother. I mean, you know, when we come back, we're going to find out, you know, what the use of this would be in the mind of Lawrence Reed. He goes, I'm going to write this. It's going to be used in this way. We'll share. So there, when we come back, we'll talk about it as a tool, as something on the shelf, and you want to get three of them to, you know, hand out to the right guy to do something, you know?
Okay.
So that's what we'll do when we come back. We'll be back three, 4 minutes. How are things going with the fee while you're in election cycle?
Well, we don't really see all that much impact. If anything, the readership on the website's going up because we do comment on issues that people are focused on right now, although we don't take any stance on candidates. So we're doing better all across the board and doing very well. We're now the number two website in the country when it comes to the message of liberty.
There you go. Well, who's number one? Lou or something?
Reason.
Okay. Foundation.
Yep.
You know, I have fee on my hot links, you know, when I go and look at whatever. And I think over the past 3-4 months, I've used fee probably 2-3 times as much as I had in the rest of the year. Because they said this about that, put that up there. You know, one less thing I got to talk about. So,
yep, and we're putting out more content than ever before, about 9, on average, 9 new articles every day.
Really? Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got, you know, I get to express myself on the radio, so I don't write as much as I should. And I think I got one a comment, man. There's so much stuff to, you know, the overlapping of issues and activities and technology and activism and stuff. There's an awakening that of just the power that the individuals have. We got like, you know, the invention of printing presses is all over the place and decentralization of everything. You know, that's the thing. You know, maybe we'll get to that in the last segment. But this has been my big, giant, you know, overwhelming awareness growing thing is that the only way to combat these guys, in my opinion, is not go, we're in charge of the marble monuments now. You know, we got voted in. We're the guys. You know, I'm just like, that's so last century, last millennia. Yeah. And just public opinion. It's a decentralization of everything, just in your mind. Like I got, you know, a solar panel and I, you know, power my bathroom light or something, you know. I can at least power the refrigerator light, you know, something, you know. And I got a couple of chickens. I grew a tomato plant. I, you know, decentralized in, you know, my communication. I got, you know, my education. Everything just, this concept of decentralization and quit trying to change or create a collective to beat up their collective against collectivism. I mean, just stop. And it's just living that life, and I'm seeing it being ingrained in the generation next, the young guys, and we really saw it take off with the Levolution, what the possibility was in an entire generation. Now these guys are having children that are, you know, hell, they're like South Park age or something, you know? And I'm seeing a cultural shift, like this fourth turning thing, and I'm just, how can we perpetuate that? And that's where things like your book comes in. How can you, you know, encourage? I'm wondering, at the end of this book, I'm inspired to, what was the theme? You see my point? I mean, how's it going to be used? I'm going to give it to all my grandchildren, my cousins. So when we come back, that's what I want to focus on so we can, you know, help promote the book, but also as a tool for something.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Into the fray against they. They, them, those. Those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. And, you know, if I'm always looking for an opportunity to inspire. I don't want to control. I don't want to. I just kind of send them on their own path, because what happens is young people are newly aware of whatever the heck's going on. People, they come up, and if you don't try and just beat them over the head with what they should or have to do, if you can inspire them, you know, to, you know, just be aware of certain things. They come to you and they say, hey, did you know about this and about that? And look at that. All of a sudden, you can see their mind, the key opened the door, and they just, whoa, there's a whole nother thing here. Well, you know, sometimes books, change planets. And, you know, and if you, a lot of times you just need to be inspired. You just need an example. You need, you know, one of the 40 characters, chapters, people in the book by Lawrence Reed from FEE, you know, the Foundation for Economic Education, FEE.org. All of a sudden, what do you have? You have a tool. And I'm wondering how this tool is going to be used. What do you think is coming out of it already? It's been out a little bit. Have you gotten any responses, Lawrence?
Yeah, the response has been terrific. It's listed as a number one bestseller in historical essays on Amazon, and it's also marketed in other places like ISI.org and our website, fee.org. Sales have been quite brisk. And I think what's going to happen is that people are going to see this book as, number one, something that they can use themselves to educate themselves about great people, great men and women of the present and of the past, who should be examples of character and courage and conviction for us all. They're going to want to pass it on, I think, to especially the young people, so that they grow up understanding that, hey, you can make a difference for better. Character matters. If you don't fix your character, everything else is lost. Character is everything.
Culture.
That's what I hope. Culture is an outgrowth of character.
Yep, exactly. It's a culture thing. It's just the general opinion of these guys are scumbags and not to be emulated, and I, you know, don't want to be like them, and kind of, you know, because all they're looking at, but the Wall Street banker guys, they got babes and drive this kind of car and got that yacht. You know, I must emulate them. I must, you know, honor them. I must be inspired by them. How about not? How about we go by a character trait? How we go by that, you know, like what grandma used to say kind of thing? And then you give examples of that, and hopefully people are inspired to be more like that. What is, you know, give me some of the character. I mean, you talked about, you know, speaking truth to power and that kind of stuff. What did you find was a common trait? Were they all what?
Courageous, absolutely courageous. Whether it be Cicero from ancient Rome, who gave his life to try to save the values of the early Roman Republic. Those values were things like freedom, free enterprise, small government, representative government. He was against tyranny, gave his life for that cause.
You know, when you say courage, I mean, are bad guys, they don't have courage. I mean, they may take risk. It's not the same thing. They're not, usually bad guys aren't willing to take the punishment, like going to jail. That's kind of one thing they avoid. But there is a difference in the kind of courage you'd have Dr. Evil or something. I mean, you know, give me the parallel for somebody that's bad that would have that trait. Can they?
That's a tough question. See, I use the term courage to imply, the right thing. That is to say, exhibiting bravery on behalf of the right things, not on behalf of the wrong things. So to come up with somebody who's a bad guy and also courageous, gee, I'd have to give that a lot of thought.
I just thought of it. I mean, I'm trying to think. I'm going, can you be inspired by bad guys? Well, yeah, a lot of people are. I want to be wealthy. I want to be powerful. I want to be in charge. I want to something. I go, do they have courage? These guys usually they're running from fights, or they're BSing about them, or they're lying about, you know, their position. That courage thing, I can't even think of an example where it would apply to a tyrant. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, even the worst person probably at one time or another has done something that you might say, well, that was a good thing. That was a good decision. Or, you know, he made the right decision there. But that's not the kind of person I write about in Real Heroes. I'm talking about people who fairly consistently, as flawed as they were as human beings, nonetheless, fairly consistently applied courage and strong character, who believed in something, believed in the right things, and left the world a better and freer place. So if you're a bad guy, maybe you exhibited courage at one time or another, but if you left the world less safe, less free, less prosperous, and a worse place in any way, you're not in my book. You can bet on that.
Yeah, that's something to ponder for a second. I never even thought of that. Can you have somebody of... and? You have to determine what evil intent is. You know, what is good, what is bad. You know, and that's why I get it down to bumper sticker. I mean, are those just want to be left alone? Those won't leave them alone. I mean, I just like, you know, first thing is, if you won't leave me alone, bad guy. bad. Yeah, but it's for your own good and noble cause of we're going to take and, you know, save the children or something. Ah, bad guy. You know, it's just, so I'm wondering what your criteria of good would be.
You know, some people use the term good to say it's exemplified by good intentions. Good intentions alone make you good. And I would certainly quarrel with that. I would say, wait a minute. What if you have good intentions, but you use evil means to achieve them? Or what if you have good intentions, but never do a thing to actually carry them out in any peaceful, productive way? I think to be good suggests that you are drawing from and supporting and exemplifying the virtues that we know to be good, such as honesty, self-reliance to the extent your abilities permit, patience, and courage, and intellectual humility. That's important. That's the idea that as much as you know, you should understand that there's still a universe of knowledge out there that you don't know. Don't be arrogant. Don't think you know it all. Responsibility is another important aspect of character. If you're irresponsible, then it doesn't matter what your good intentions are, you're going to mess things up. So the people I write about in Real Heroes have all of these things. Courage, character, conviction, and when it comes to character, those traits that I just mentioned are wrapped up in all of them throughout the book.
You know, that would be in the preface in the beginning of the book. And so, I mean, do you define these things? You know, how these people made or what
yeah.
you're. Yeah.
Absolutely. I have an extended introduction in which I explain what I mean by heroism and why I chose the people that I did. Why I left out many that I could have put in. And again, you know, there are so many people so much better known maybe in history than many of those I wrote about, but I didn't want to just rehash old stuff. You know, I could have written about Winston Churchill and George Washington, but everybody knows an awful lot about them. I wanted to dust off the people who did things every bit as heroic, but in a different context and who deserve to be better known.
You know, one thing, I have no idea if this made it in, but, you know, I just saw the more detailed story of the guy that wouldn't do the Sieg Heil salute, and he just stood there with his arms folded in a big, you know, black and white photo of Nazi Germany thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I've seen that picture.
You know, that it's people like that, and you find the history of why there's so much more behind that, you know, of why somebody would do that. And it's just a one act of... You know, maybe not a lifetime thing to qualify for your book, but I'm looking at that kind of thing. And, and I'm wondering, you know, what age bracket would get, is it too much for a 10-year-old? Do you need to be a teenager? Are you 8th grade? Are you junior high? You know, maybe for this book? Are you in college? I mean, help me out here. What do you think? Because you got to inspire them young. I mean, you know, get them before it's too late, or do you think it's going to change people that are, you know, further along in years?
Well, the youngest person that I write about in the book was actually one of the better-known ones, Anne Frank, who was, during the Holocaust period in the Netherlands, was holed up in a secret compartment in a warehouse and writing her wonderful diary that is a phenomenal inspiration to this day.
Oh, so you included Anne Frank.
Yeah, she's one of the better-known ones. There is a sprinkling of better-known people, but she's also in danger of being forgotten, so I wanted to bring her to the fore again.
Okay, we'll talk about that when we come back. Or we can talk about it now. Because that is, I never read Anne Frank. I mean, I saw the movie and documentary and read the articles on and what and kind of, you know, and stuff, but... what was so inspiring by that book, other than the detail of what happened? What made her, you know, make your book?
Well, her attitude in the face of all the terrible circumstances of her life, of fleeing from oppression and having to hide from it, ultimately being found and sent to a concentration camp, as she wrote her diary over a couple-year period, you would expect a lot of despair. But you get nothing but almost nothing but gratitude and optimism. And I think that's just wonderful that a young person could find it in herself to think of the good things of the world in spite of facing some of the worst.
Well, you know, I'm looking at when something like that happens, I'm always looking for grandma. I mean, where was the inspiration in their life? What standard they set? You see all these great things. Look how great. And it, oftentimes that doesn't come out of a vacuum. I mean, it's either from circumstances, which, you know, the character or personality or the wiring of their brain or whatever, you know, or it was grandma, grandpa, somebody, a kind uncle down the street of somebody inspired them.
Yeah, in the case of Anne Frank, she came from a very good and loving family, imparting the right values, and that helped her get through those 2 years before she was captured. So, her parents were a great positive influence on her.
Okay. So her parents, is there some information about her parents?
Not in my chapter, but I discovered that as I was reading about her, that her parents were a great influence for the good on her.
Okay. Well, you could see why that would be of interest to me, because I'm looking for a common denominator. You know, what is the, I give you an example. The public school system, I started realizing this in the 90s when I would go around and speak, you know, to schools when I was with the Libertarian Party and all that as county chair and everything. And I could see that elementary, you can keep them entertained. You know, I got kids and grandkids. I can, you know, keep them in their seat and kind of engaged and all that kind of stuff. High school, it's a rip-roaring discussion, and they already know everything because they're 16 now. You don't know anything. But keep it going. Then college, of course, you get a little bit higher discussion, and they, inspire some people. It was junior high. It was 7th and 8th grade. It's when they started going through puberty. It was their questioning authority, and it's, it's dad, and there's a D.A.R.E. program, turn them in kind of thing. So they take advantage of that. That's why Hitler Youth is always this junior high age. So they want to get you before puberty locks in your character or your personality traits or something. That's why at 7th and 8th grade, junior high, it's social studies and civil studies and history and government, and I'm just a bill and all that crap. Whenever I would speak the junior high, it was amazing. I could get them chanting freedom, man. I mean, it was just, they were just so, woo, man, this guy explained it. Yeah, we can rebel against the right stuff. So
I know the feeling. We focus on people of that age at our fee seminars, and I see it. I see the lights going on in the minds of young people.
Exactly. So I'm just going there. I'm looking for the. That's why I have the domain defending Archimedes. You know, it's a project that it's always about the future, the inspiration of the next. I'm tired of fixing people. I want to inoculate them, and we're going to see if your book is an inoculation. All right, here we go.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country.
You know, I can just feel it. You know, it's building up. And there's still all kinds of troubles and, death and damnation and threat of and mushroom clouds are coming of terrorists and Durka Jihad. But there's so much impact that young minds are susceptible to. And that's why you have government, in my opinion, that you got junior high. That's when they get, it's the Hitler Youth thing, it's you're going through puberty, it's a young, impressionable minds of, yes, damn it, I'm an adult now, I can, I got something plugged into my head how I'm going to think about this and that and Sieg Heil. And if you can get some inspiration that is inoculation against this taking over of your children. I mean, you said, oh, here, Mr., Nazi organization, collectivist, scumbag, tyrannical, I pledge allegiance to, we're going to kick somebody's ass, and take my child for, 6-8 hours a day, every day. I mean, yeah, go, let me see how that works out. I'm going, oh, you're killing me. So I'm just looking for the inoculation against a lot of this. And a lot of times, that's what they use history for. They'll come in and they'll say, this person was a great man because he collectivized everybody and, you know, killed a bunch of Indians, so we founded Phoenix or something. And I'm going, you know, what is, I don't know, promoted as character traits? And how can you tell these stories to be an inspiration to inoculate these young minds against all this crap they want to do? And here's Lawrence Reed, wrote a book about these very 40 people like this. And he was influenced to go when the Czech Republic was invaded by, you know, Russian tanks, kind of, no, you're going to be with our side kind of thing. There were protests just like against, whatever, we're going to go to war in Syria or something. He's a young man at 14 being inspired. So I'm going, what inspired you? Why were you there? What grandmother do we have to thank? I mean, how did that happen?
Well, I think more than anybody else, Ernest, I'd have to thank my father. He was not well-read in political thought or current events, but he had all the right instincts. And I remember, I must have been about 8 because it was in the third grade, when he wanted to take me to Florida in February for a week to visit relatives. And I said something to my teacher at the public school that I was going to Florida, and she struck fear in my heart when she said, he can't do that. You have to be here in school. And
yeah.
And then I always remember when the principal called home to talk to him, and I could only hear my dad's side of the conversation, but I recall him listening for the longest time, and then he said this. He said to the principal, now you listen to me. He's my son. We're going to Florida. Don't call here again. Click. And he hung up. And he was my hero. I thought, good for him, you know. So he kind of inspired a questioning of authority that I think left a deep imprint on me.
You know, that is one thing that I definitely, I want to make sure that my grandkids and everything understand you do well in school, you're respectful, you know, blah, 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 blah. But man, like yesterday, you know, they're off this week. It's Columbus Day. Week of teachers get the whatever, you know, so they're off this week. So we get to spend time with a lot of the grandkids. So, you know, got 7 of them, you know, are 7 and younger, and they come over and it's, oh man, we're going to learn something. It's grandpa. It's like, nope, we got to learn something today. So then we did mechanical advantage, you know, the plane and levers and pulleys. So I have this little, geodesic dome I have back there, and I put a couple of pulleys up there and a third pulley on the thing so that they could lift this big cinder block, the 3-year-old, I can do it. And they pull it, you know, and this, I'm going, yeah. They showing you this in first grade, are they? You know, they teaching you something? Did you actually learn something? I'm going, if you're not in school, you get to really learn cool stuff with grandpa, you know? So this is mindset. I just want them to know that it's not just school. You can learn something. Because I remember the first week when my granddaughter, she'd been to first grade a week or two. And I said something, and she goes, well, my teacher says this, so you're just wrong. Mm-hmm. And I let it go, and I just like, yeah.
You know, a related point, Ernest, is every time I speak to young people, and I do that almost every week somewhere, I'm 63 years of age, but I speak to high school and college students all over the place. I like to start my remarks by saying, hello, fellow students, and then explaining that the reason I say that is you're not to be simply a student while you're within 4 walls in formal schooling, that you should be thinking of learning as a lifelong occupation, something that never ends. Because as much as you'll ever know, there's still a universe of knowledge out there that you don't know. So never stop being a student.
Thank you. Well, this in this book, is there a lot of their education or their awareness or what made them this way or something? You get into a little bit of history of their inspiration.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, in almost every case. And I even have a chapter on homeschool heroes.
Yeah.
For those parents who do the heroic thing, it may not be for everybody, but for those parents who homeschool, I regard them as heroes. And not only are they doing great work with their children, but they're also saving taxpayers money and serving as great examples for all of us.
You know, that there's so many. If I had to pick, that's one thing. That's why years ago, I was so inspired by, you know, some very intelligent people that are good friends, and I just keep hammering on them. And I got the, I finally came to the awareness that they didn't need a special program. They didn't need it. They go, look, man, who's going to, all I got to do is, I want to learn anything. I just read it. I memorize it. I got 200 IQ. Who's going to teach me anything? You know, so they suck up knowledge on their own. They just want to be left alone. They don't need a program. They just need the understanding that you're just a lifelong student and you can just learn it yourself, whatever inspires them to do. And I'm going, wow. So it's like you're Archimedes. You just want to, these geniuses of the future, you just want to leave them alone. I want to defend Archimedes. Do I need a list? No, I don't want a list or anything. I just want, I don't even want to know who they are. I just want, you know, you don't need the alliance going and finding River Thames and you're in the alliance of We Rule You, you know? Yeah. So
One of my chapters is on Augustine, the 5th century theologian who turned his life around because of two things that he read. One was by Cicero, who's also a chapter in the book. That gave him a deep love of wisdom, and so he committed himself for the rest of his life to trying to learn the truth in every field that he studied. And the other was some works of the Bishop Ambrose of Milan in Italy. And Augustine ultimately became one of the greatest Christian thinkers of all time and a great moral example for everybody.
Good, good. What was some of your favorites? I mean, out of 40, I mean, do they all kind of hold a special part, or is there, you know, a couple that stand out?
Yeah, I think the one about Witold Pilecki, P-I-L-E-C-K-I, really left a big imprint on me. He was a great Polish freedom fighter. He fought against the Bolsheviks to secure Polish independence in 1918. And then later, he became a leading commander in the resistance against both the Nazis and the Soviets during World War II. He was the only man that we have ever been able to determine who volunteered to get arrested in the hopes he would be sent by the Nazis to Auschwitz, the notorious concentration camp. And the reason he wanted to get in there was to form a resistance from the inside. And he certainly did. It was a phenomenal thing that he did for 2.5 years from inside Auschwitz as an inmate. He later escaped, which only 143 people ever did, and then became a leading resistance fighter again in the Warsaw Uprising. And then after the war, he spied on the Soviets to reveal to the world what they were doing in Poland.
Holy crap! Yeah. I gotta buy the book just to read that. That's a movie. Yeah, the movie. Have they done a movie on this guy or anything?
Well, would you believe there's a movie in the works? It's coming out in December of 2017.
Ah, score! Okay, what was the guy's name?
Pilecki, P-I-L-E-C-K-I. Looks like Pilecki, but it's pronounced Pilecki, and he's one of the chapters in Real Heroes.
Yeah, write that down, Don. I want to get that. That, man, you should have let off of that one.
And by the way, his daughter and son are still living. I met his son, spent time with him in Poland this past March.
Holy crap. All right, don't go anywhere. Damn it. Now I got a 5 billion other questions. You know, I'm just, hey, you got to go buy the book. Yeah, man, I would have let off of that one. That's awesome. Okay.
Oh, golly, he's an incredible guy.
Well, that is. Well, tell me about the movie. Who's doing it? What's up with that? Is that?
It's an American film producer by the name of David Gray. And you know the guy, the actor, Gary Oldman?
No.
You'd recognize him, I'm sure. He's been cast as the lead role as Witold Pilecki. And it's coming out in December of next year. So you're going to hear a lot about this guy. It's going to be his Facebook page for the movie already has more than 100,000 fans.
Okay, Gary Oldman, I see him. Yeah, I know who. What's he been in? A bunch of stuff.
Spy movies. He was in with Kevin Bacon. He was in Murder in the First some years ago. Yeah, great actor.
Okay, let's see. Oh, yeah, he was the bad guy in Fifth Element.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yep. Yeah, okay. That's why probably a lot of people would know. He's in Dracula, Dark Knight. Oh, he's the Inspector Gordon in Batman.
Exactly, yeah, that's right.
Okay, that's what you need to say. Right.
And would you believe I've come to know this American producer? I looked him up online and sent him a note via LinkedIn just saying, hey, I've written about this guy. I understand you're making a movie about him. And now he and I have become great friends. So,
well, he probably had the same, you know, impression of, you know, why he's one of his heroes enough to make a freaking movie about him. I mean,
yeah, I think so. Yeah.
You know, this is, wow, that is awesome. So he did it himself. He, the producer, is he directing or, I mean, what's his role in it?
He is both the producer and the director. And,
right. So, man, one of those heroes is the guy that made the movie about the hero. Okay, yeah. So, you know, what's his background?
Well, he's a filmmaker from the Northeast who moved to California. I'm drawing a blank. I haven't actually met him yet. We talked by phone. And
okay, what's his name? I'm going to get Don. I want to try and get him on. Can you introduce us?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I want to hear all about he's going to do the movie. Crap, man. Talk it up, man. Make a big deal out of it.
Oh, yeah, be happy to. I'll connect by email. His name is David Aaron Gray, and I have Donna's email, I think, so I can connect
yeah,
through.
Yeah, the producer thing. Go ahead and, Donna, just send him a reminder right now, just to, you know, that contact for this guy, so he can forward it and let the guy know that we want to, you know the guy. So, yeah, that would be awesome. Okay. See, now you got it. Now you got a story. See, now you got a, you know, in the book about and kind of the story and the movie coming out. See, I want to see a big giant uptick in sales, you know, right as soon as this movie starts to hit. We make a big woohoo out of it. Because what's the budget on? Is it, you know, like a $10 million, you know, $100,000, you know, $400 million? I mean, what?
I don't know, but I have every reason to believe it's going to be substantial. It's not a cut and paste, you know, amateur thing. It's going to be first rate.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're going into Auschwitz, you know, that's going to be like you need some extras, you know what I mean? Okay, so what's the producer's name?
David Aaron Gray, G-R-A-Y.
G-R-A-Y?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Let me see if I got, you know, other movies he's done. Day and film producer, who's who, yada, yada, yada. And film producer,
Are you on Facebook?
No, I'm just, it has a worldwide who's who and something.
Oh, I mean, are you personally, do you have...
Barely.
You use Facebook?
Yeah, well, yeah, but, you know, not that I'm proud of or say anything.
Okay. Well, if you do go there, type in Vitold, that's spelled W-I-T-O-L-D, Pilecki, the movie, and you'll see it has a page with over 100,000 fans on it already.
Okay, and okay, I type in what?
Vitold, W-I-T-O-L-D, Pilecki, P-I-L-E-C-K-I, the okay. movie, and into Facebook, and you will see their page. It's got 102,491 fans, and it's a year away from even being out.
That movie... It doesn't have that, but it has We Told Pilecki, not the movie. Let's see. But I want, you know, when you got something like this, I'm encouraged by making these kinds of heroes as opposed to, you know, I know how to really use a sniper rifle. I mean,
yeah. Say, Ernie, I've got another radio interview that...
Hey, thanks for spending the extra time with me, man. I'm glad you hooked us up with this. Donna's sending that. Get us hooked up. We do the show. Give you all kinds of street cred. Done.
Hey, will do.
All right,
thanks
man.
A lot.
Peace, brother. Bye.
See ya. Bye.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here. Let us make them remember. We are not afraid.
unafeared individuals here on this show, and even have, you know, unafeared individuals writing books about unafeared individuals. We just had Lawrence read on from Fee and his new book. I'm just, you know, there is so much good out there, and a lot of it are, you know, inspired by, we're inspired by people that do good. And, you know, how do you define good? You know, it's not bad. it's not being evil. How do you define that? I tell you, man, there's nothing more ew in my mind than just, you know, taking advantage of young parents, of the youth, of pre-born. You know, you're determining the rest of their life by things that you do or advocate. Or, you know, and we're talking about inoculations. You know, we're talking about immunizations. We're talking about vaccines, viruses. We're talking about, you know, informed consent. Hell, just consent at all on this stuff. And I'm just, you know, once you start getting immersed and it starts affecting my life, you know, and it wasn't through, we made the conscious decision not to go through all of the immunizations and stay on schedule and all the government schedule, all that crap, you know, with our kids and grandkids. They haven't been vaccinated and they're healthy and bright eyed. It's just amazing. And I'm just so satisfied for that. But my oldest daughter, 31, when she had her first child, she had a lot of blood. 23, 26, you know, units of blood. You only get like six, you know, that are in you. So, I mean, they just, you know, so they pumped her through all kinds of crap, and we're dealing with that. And I'm really glad that we got a hold of, and we can have on a regular basis, Dr. Judy Mikovits. I'm going to give you a bio real quick, but I just want you to understand, you know, she's at the front lines and one of those people in Lawrence Reed's book of heroes, somebody that's truth to power kind of thing, regardless of the cost. And heck, because of it, they're just, oh, we're going to dig in, get some. Well, I can feel it coming. There's low hanging fruit on showing bad guys for being the bad guys that they are. And I see a cresting, a wave that's coming, and it's going to become common knowledge. I was at a discussion group with, you know, powerful people, and they're, you know, well-informed. And they're going, you tinfoil hat people, you know, kind of on the vaccine thing. And I go, look, here's a couple of films you should watch. Here's some information. I'm just telling you, as a friend, don't get so locked in and dug in on stuff you really don't know what's going on, because then you'll just be seen as another moron. I mean, I actually said that, okay? As another moron, because you just believe in what they're saying. Do some research. This is cresting. It's going to come. Well, Judy's at the front, you know, lines of this. And in fact, there's an event going on at the CDC in Atlanta this weekend that Judy's going to tell us all about. Tell us everything, Dr. Judy.
Yes, this weekend in Atlanta, it's actually a protest in front of the CDC. It's called Truth and Transparency. And we're calling for a full congressional investigation and whatever it takes to expose the CDC fraud surrounding the MMR vaccination that's now gone on for more than a decade and crippled I don't even know how many innocent children.
Okay, now this is one thing. This is where, you know, there's no central plan for freedom. Everybody can do their own thing. You know, we got everybody doing different things. My thing is that immediately we're going to the CDC, you know, out in front of the bad guys that are whistleblowing, and we uncovered that they knew and they're lying sacks of doo-dee-wa. So I'm going, okay, to get what? Oh, a congressional hearing. We need Congress to come. Well, Congress is going to fix it. And so on. I'm just like, you know, I could see making, that's why I like having documentaries or movies or information or stories or celebrity of inspire made you look or something, and some activism, street signs, running for office. I mean, something that's not just a whole end all. See, they had a congressional hearing, the same guys that allowed this and perpetuated and funded and kind of just like, ew. So, I mean, there's got to be more to it than we want a congressional hearing. I mean, is that the end goal?
Well, there's so much more to it. This is a full-on protest, and we want, you know, the vaccine court and the laws that protect these criminals repealed. We want everybody we've been talking about the last few weeks, the criminals that are involved in this, in prison where they belong, We want everything stopped right now, every vaccination of anyone until we know the truth. When it starts hitting their pocketbooks, they'll get it.
Yeah, I tell you where it sits our pocketbooks is when they stop making money, when people just say no. You know, that whatever it does to say no. Well, let's go ahead. This could give you out Judy's bona fides here. Judy A. Mikovits earned a BA in chemistry from the University of Virginia in 1980, a PhD in biochemistry and molecular biology from George Washington University in 92. In her 35-year career, she has done pioneering work in immunology, epigenetics, virology, and natural product drug development, including discovery of the modulation of DNA. I mean, it goes on in big words, okay? Now, the thing is that you came at this. We're going to try and get you on a regular basis weekly as we build up to this crest, this wave that's coming. And from all of your research, you're just like, hey, we found out that this, you know, these retroviruses have made it to humans and they cause autoimmune of whatever. But I'm going, then it started as I learned more and more, I'm finding, wow, retrovirus. And there's even an article here that you sent, I think I got it from you, that the viruses that made us human, and we put it up on Freedom's Phoenix, and it was a PBS Nova thing, and they said, yep, retroviruses come in and change us to a point to where, like, you have the, what is it, marsupials, you know, you have the in a pouch or the kangaroos or something. Well, that's how they gestate and they grow. But then in mammals, they had the placenta. And that placenta, that was a retrovirus that kicked that, was the understanding that I got. That's how much change in our DNA as an organism we can be changed by the itty bitty little virus that goes in there and it replicates, and we're an alien species hybrid or something else. And what's the man doing? Pumping babies full of these retroviruses. And I go, well, let's see what happens, you know? And I'm going, wow, that is, how far off am I?
Not very far off, unfortunately.
So we're a big, giant guinea pig experiment.
Yes, we're a big, fat experiment. And they know it, and they've known the possibility, and they've known what could happen for since at least the mid-80s when we discovered all the human retroviruses. And they just keep doing it. And they mandate it, and as you say, when they mandate something, it's really bad.
Yeah, if they have to mandate something, it's because they couldn't convince me. They're going to, you know, this is great and better for you because we said. And they, if they couldn't convince me to do something, I go, yeah, you should do that. Eat your vegetables. Yeah, there's a good, you know, reason for whatever. Grandma said, and I do, and I give you a perfect example. This weekend, my 7-year-old granddaughter, both her two front teeth were loose. You know, so we're jerking around. You know, my son, he played around and he got one. And I go, hey, man, I'm grandpa, man. I'll show you how to do this. You put your finger up behind it and you just flick it. You know, just bam, and it just pops out, you know. And so we're getting the two front teeth both gone same time. Dad and grandpa, you know, we're competing with how fast we can pull teeth. So they come out. And there was, I remember when I was a kid, my grandmother always had me rinse with Epsom salt whenever it came out. And then we're going, why? I don't know. You know, let's look it up. We got the internet. We look it up. Oh, yeah, it does. You know, it's for tooth decay. It helps with this. It fixes that. And I'm going, all right, we got a reason. Why are they, you know, grandma knows. Why all of a sudden a generation of doing this other stuff? Yeah, that's one thing I'm just, I equate that to, you know, we know over time and we do things and they hold up and I'm going, okay, I'm just not going to go do it just because my grandma did it. You know, I got a computer in my hand, so I'm gonna look up what, you know, sure enough, you know, it says that it's good for healing of the, you know, when teeth, whatever the heck. And I'm going, okay, man, grandma knew something. How did she know? I guarantee it wasn't some scientific paper or something. It was, you know, that's just what they did. So I go, now we can kind of look now. Well, these things carry on, and they don't have to mandate Epsom salt for fixing my child, or, you know, preventative, or because you pulled a tooth. It's not mandated. I don't see it anywhere. It's not, you know, like you got to go to the government dentist of, you know, pull baby teeth. You know, I'm going, It's because it worked, because it's part of our culture, because it's the thing to do. Now, you can look and see that there's a reason for it, and you get, you know, some science behind it. But I'm going, whenever government has to mandate it, when they got to make it law, when there's it's guaranteed that it didn't survive from grandma to grandma. Why? Because it wasn't good. I mean, they, you know, if they have to mandate it, it's bad. Usually. I mean, that's my default on that. So that's a good example. I'll try and sum it and explain it better when we come back. But the mandates are always... So now I'm going, are there new mandates that you're trying to prevent? Are you trying to take away mandates? When you do the CDC protest and you're invoking Congress, I'm going, all right, well, I think that's part of the problem, is that we're putting too much deference on them. When I think that they operate on slim enough margins, they create this pharma industrial complex thing so much, you get 5% of the people just know, they'll freak out. And I think that's what's happening anyway.
Right. Yeah, that's what we hope with this screening. We're screening vax twice this weekend in Atlanta, and we're going to stay out there so that people know, because people are starting to realize. I mean, I have about as much faith in as Congress as you do, probably even less. But what we're trying to prevent is, you know, the next president coming in and making these state mandates federal law. Because when they become federal law, we're 100 times worse off than we are, because there's nowhere to go.
So pharma is not wanting them a Donald Trump? Because I saw a Donald saying, yeah, yes, this is not... Yeah, he wasn't digging it, and I'm wondering if they go, oh, hell no, we definitely don't want us some Donald.
That's right. They don't want that, because he's not bought and paid for. Hillary's bought and paid for. In fact, I saw an article yesterday where we could talk all about how your doctor and his politics are mixing with your health care. So it matters what health care you get if your doctor is Republican or Democrat.
Really?
and it matters how much money they're making.
Okay.
It matters how much money.
Well, let's go ahead and... we just had the debate. You know, we had a debate party. We always do. As much as I can stand, I can walk
out. Yeah, we did too.
I walk out. You know, I'm just like, ugh. But let's talk about, you know, what you just said, the politics of, and the fact that, you know, Trump said this. So I would imagine pharma is not definitely in Trump's camp, you know, and... So we'll talk
and
about
pharma it. Controls the media, so that's why you could see the media always rips up Trump and doesn't say one word about Hillary.
There are so many reasons why just the anti-establishment up. All right, here we're coming back.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Country music's got mamas and daddies. We got barrooms and no heartbreak songs. But I'm here today to stand up and say how I feel about my home sweet home. What's left, what's right, and what's wrong. And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes. You took our jobs and sent them overseas. Now we owe billions to the red Chinese.
You know, this just sounds like a pro-Trump song, doesn't it? I tell you where this came from. This was before the 06 election. It was liberals in Nashville honky-tonk for not Bush. You know, it was when they did the Dixie Chicken thing. They got Dixie Chick said, hey, man, don't blame them. They were in England or, you know, London or something. They had a concert, and they said, yeah, Bush is, yeah, we're from Texas or something. Or our country, yeah, he's not our president. Ooh, they're album burning, man. They just went after him. It became a thing. You got Dixie Chick. Well, liberal, progressive, whatever, oriented, honky-tonk musicians in Nashville made this song. and it was all about, you know, against Bush. But it might as well just be a pro-Trump thing, you know? It's all of this, those are just being bad. They're bad. Well, Trump, I remember I was talking, it was Del Bigtree, the producer of Vax the Movie, had him on. I'm going, is there any presidential candidate even said anything about vaccines and vaccine? He goes, yeah, Trump. And I go, really? And you pull up the clip. It was when they were in the Ronald Reagan library on the wing of the 707 of Air Force One of Reagan's whatever. And they're standing on the wing there in the museum and doing the debates. And Dr. Carson, I think, said something about it. And Trump made the point that he's had a lot of kids be playing around his desk of employees, and they're just great. And you could see the brightening, they get vaccinated, and boom. Totally different kids, got big feet. And all. He goes, I seen it happen. There is something going, but he gave some deference to that. Well, I guarantee freaking T saying that pharma is not, you know, voting for Trump. And they have such a big impact on the media dollars, and every other freaking commercial is, you know, people running through fields and dancing in slow motion, how great and wonderful, as they read all the side effects of how your testicles shrink up and blow away, you know, if you take this drug. And I'm going, wow. You know one thing I did, Judy? I bet you I'll try it now, you know, while you're talking or in the break or something. I go online, I go, you know, to YouTube, and I go, somebody's had to have done a parody of all of these ailments, all these side effects, and done some kind of parody of a 2 minute long of we're all going to die if you take this as they're, you know, have, you know, flowers blooming or something. Not a single one. I've looked several times and you can't find, they take those parodies off. I mean, pharma has got a freaking tentacles into something. So about the POTUS race, what's the role pharma's playing in this?
Pharma's controlling the media. Pharma's controlling the candidates. Pharma's given, you know, the Clinton HRC Foundation several million dollars. And did you notice when she got pneumonia and they talked about her physical, they said, ah, she's fully vaccinated. You know, what does that even mean? Well, if she's fully vaccinated, folks, that means she got the, yeah, then why'd she get pneumonia? Because she got the new pneumonia vaccine and the flu vaccine. And then they just ripped him because he's not vaccinated. Why is this our conversation other than what's happening?
Really?
To our
they
country?
Said that, you know, Trump's bad because he's not vaccinated. He's not vaccinated. He can't get fully vaccinated.
He never got a flu shot is what they said.
Oh,
about
my
him.
God.
He never got a flu shot. What a bad man. I never got a flu shot either. What a bad woman.
Really? Okay, so what, tell me about the speakers and what the presentation is going to be this weekend at the CDC thing. How's the program, you know, where is it going to be and who's putting on? What's the web page? We got all the information on the today's archive on Freedom's Phoenix on October 11th, 16th, Tuesday. Go there. Has all the information. But tell the people what they can expect to see.
Yes, cdctruth.org. So on Friday, and it's the CDC Truth and Transparency meeting is right at the top of the page, and you can click on it where you see George Washington peeking through looking for truth. And on Friday, we're doing a full day protest at the CDC, and then in the evening, we are there in Atlanta, and I can, the website tells you all the locations, for the various events. And so we're screening the Vaxxed. We'll have, the cast of Vaxxed, Del Bigtree and Dr. Andy Wakefield, and a panel discussion that will involve me as well for several hours to talk about the very questions and the real science and politics behind it. And this really isn't science, folks. This isn't about explaining retrovirus. This is about, are you kidding me? Right there. They lied. They covered it up. They've lied for more than a decade and they're getting away with it. And so the whole politics behind how they injured these kids. And then in the very beginning of the movie, as you know, you can see the media's role, you know, every single thing. Oh, there's an outbreak of measles in Disneyland. Are you kidding me? 30 people got measles. We had measles parties with more than 30 people when I was a child. And we all have strong immune immune system. Nothing wrong with us. So we're doing that on Friday night. On Saturday, there's an education summit. So people like me and Marcella Piper Terry, who came to the Phoenix Education Summit, we're teaching parents. We're teaching them what's in these shots. We're teaching them how the age of the child matters, how the immune system matters, how the genetic susceptibility matters, and we're showing, we're teaching them to recognize the politics. We're teaching them how to ask for the consent form and say, why are you injecting formaldehyde in my child? You know, and taking this to the doctors. We're teaching the doctors, we're teaching the parents. We have Minister Tony Muhammad talking later in the afternoon and Sunday as well, that afternoon as well, another vax symposium. So it's going to be a great weekend of multiple opportunities for people in the Atlanta, on the East Coast, to learn about this. And then I'm headed to Dallas on Saturday night to go to Ty Bollinger's big meeting on the truth about cancer, because it's not only childhood diseases all of this affects, it's the truth surrounding all of the disease we see in our population, all of the cancer, all of the motor neuron disease, Lou Gehrig's disease, Parkinson's disease, chronic Lyme's. There's all a basis in this inappropriate vaccination and poisoning of the U.S. people.
You know, my thing is that, you know, as you get more experienced and older and, you know, and, you know, have ailments or whatever, you start to think, how the hell did humanity survive? And you're going, maybe it was an immune system that we didn't trash and beat the living crap out of, you know? And the incentive is for you to be sick, so you need to get healed. And who's going to do that for you? And people that made you sick? Oh! Okay, I was looking for, and I put in prescription drug side effects parity. Okay, now they're, you go to YouTube and you do that, and you can see some. But, you know, what I did is, here, I'll pull the screen up, is I go in there and I said, okay, now there's some, you know, I've been doing this for years, and they would never come up. But, you know, if I go on YouTube, I can do that. But if I go into Google search engine, and I'll go prescription drug side effects parity, because that's what I'm looking. It's all about the question, you know. Question, okay. So parity. So now I go in, and I'm going, all right. Okay, there's some come up. You know, when I just did the search before, I did the YouTube and actually, you know, pulled it up and looked at it, it didn't show me these. So initial searches, it won't come up unless you already found it. See my point?
Yeah.
I go in this Google search engine, I put the exact same, I just did it, and I put in, you know, here, I can go back and do a, go back, 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 back. Okay. YouTube side effects may include... Okay, wait a minute. Back. Yeah, see, it doesn't even show what it was. Okay, see, my thing is that I get the feeling that these search engines are... Yeah, it was this one. The search engines, they show what they want to show, you know, unless you've already found it on YouTube. Then it changes the search results for you. Okay, we'll include it because he already knows about it or something. You see my
right. Yeah. Oh, very definitely.
You know, so I'm just going, this is, search engines are very powerful. They're able to, even if you're like that one young woman that was saying, I went and all the links were gone. That's our first hour today is on the MadeSafe network that you hear me talk about, decentralized internet and so on, that they, you know, they're making advances in it. They're on the next level. They're testing the network. They're doing, when you can have all that information where it can never go away, I know what kind of power that's going to have, and they're not manipulating your search results for this kind of stuff. All right, here, let me play this and see if it's a... I'm sorry, go ahead.
You're right about the engines and the search engines, and you know, the...
So you guys are familiar with those prescription drug
commercials? Big Pharma,
right?
Google, all of these people, they own, like, Wikipedia. When all of this stuff is put up, about me and the false arrest and all of this. It's every bit of it on the Wikipedia page is a lie. And yet every time somebody comes in to change it and put the truth in there, it comes back.
Wikipedia. You know. That's another good idea. We'll talk about that. Let me come back with some of this as we come back, just to see what we get on this parody thing. And see what comes up. Because I've been looking for years, and it's never there. All right, here we go.
And online, this is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Okay, we're just going to go ahead and watch this video. I want to see.
So you guys are familiar with those prescription drug commercials on TV. They always bring up some sort of situation, some sort of illness that, you know, you may have or that somebody you know may have.
Do you have trouble sleeping? Is insomnia keeping you up? Do you feel like you're not getting your 6 to 8 hours of sleep each night?
And they always present to you their product like as if, oh, if we take this, it's the miracle cure. We're going to cure you of whatever. It'll go away immediately or shortly thereafter you take it.
Now you can finally do something about it with Decevia.
And then they tell you that all the good stuff that it does, you know, it'll make this go away. It'll make you feel better, like I said before. And which is great, though. I mean, that's awesome.
With Decevia, you can finally get that sleep you have been looking for. Decevia can easily correct the problem and finally give you the rest that you deserve.
And everything is all nice and fine and dandy until they say this.
Decevia is not for everyone.
And have you noticed when they mention the side effects, it's always against some sort of peaceful or calm background or even random background. And it's almost like as if they're saying, oh yeah, there's side effects, but you know what? You're not gonna get them. And if you do, it's not that bad. Okay, so it comes with the territory. There's gonna be side effects, and some of them have a short list.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, itching, having trouble breathing, diarrhea.
Some of them have a longer list.
Additional side effects may include gambling, nightmares, drowsiness, hallucinations, an urge to go hug people, the growth of an extra limb, thinking you are Batman, switching from Apple to Android, and vice versa.
And some of them have a really, really, really long list.
Other more severe side effects may include an urge to begin a YouTube channel, turning into a zombie, Minecraft vision. For women, an erection lasting longer than 4 hours. For men, menstrual cramps and or PMS. Alien abductions, contracting every phobia known to man, breaking a rift in the space-time continuum, and even death.
And then that's when you realize, wait a second, aren't the side effects so much worse than the reason why I'm taking this in the first place?
If you start believing that you are a Jedi Knight, please stop taking Decevia. If you happen to die, please contact your doctor immediately. People on planet Earth should not take Decevia.
So the moral of the story is, if you're feeling bad, don't take something that's going to make you feel a lot worse, because we all know self-diagnosis is so much better than what the doctor tells us.
Decevia, because we can get away with it.
Yeah. So this is, you know, kind of the mindset that I'm glad people are coming to this awareness that there's something wrong, and just because somebody in a lab coat says something, that doesn't really mean anything to me. Are you anti-vaccine or just the way they're doing it, or the industry? I mean, you know, tell me what your position is on vaccines, will you, Judy?
Well, you know, I'm not anti-vaccine. That's why that's why you read that detailed bio. I spent my whole life making drugs and trying to cure cancers with drugs, and certainly modulating the immune system in so-called cancer vaccines are a big part of the work that we've done. But in 2009, when our work found that in fact confirmed and extended Dr. Wakefield's landmark study showing that there was something about this vaccination that was hurting the gastrointestinal tracts and, in fact, destroying our immune systems, both in our brain and our gut, then I said a serious study needs to be undertaken, which is exactly what he said. We didn't say these retroviruses we found caused the diseases. They were strongly associated with them. So what What I am is truth in science. It's time to do a serious study. What we found and what Dr. Wakefield found a decade earlier, said everything should have stopped. Wait a minute. Science is never settled. This is the problem in the argument today. It's not scientific. It's political. Any plague is political. It's not scientific. Science is never settled. We can always learn more. We don't understand any part of how the brain and the immune system function.
Nope, science is settled. It's all decided. Dave, conclusion of a bunch of guys in lab coats said we paid them.
Right. Well, it actually wasn't the guys in the lab coats that said it. The guys in the lab coats who said it are stopped. So the lab coats aren't the bad guys here. I'm a lab coat. The lab coats are the politicians. The lab coats are the head of our government. The lab coats are these corrupt CDC, FDA, NIH officials who have, and WHO, World Health Organization, who have let this go on for more than two decades.
Are they feeling the pressure? Is there something, you're starting to see some movement on their part? I mean, because they are amping up the commercials, man. I mean, yeah. I don't even watch TV, and, I have people coming to me talking about them, So I'm
absolutely. The amping up of the commercials, the amping up of the pressure, the let's force these laws through. Let's get Clinton in there so she can make it all federal. Let's mandate it all at the federal level because we're losing the battle on the ground at the state level. People at the state level, like there in Arizona, are taking back. We are putting every effort we can into at the state level repealing the unconstitutional Senate Bill 277. Here in California, which takes away your right to an education. The California Constitution says we have a right to an education, and our children do, and you can't mandate and put their health at risk, which is what they're doing. So, yes, the ground troops are winning, and that's why there's such a big push, and that's why I don't watch TV either, because every single commercial, that's why our doctors are bullying these patients. And
that's one thing that we found in that parody. He's going, the side effects are often more dire than the freaking thing you're trying to cure, And I'm just, eat an apple or something. Have some more milk before bed, something.
And yet nowhere is the side effect of a vaccine ever discussed. It's like it's a magic Pez dispenser and it's just candy and it's going to make you just fine. Nowhere does anybody get the information of what's in that. And that's when we arm patients with the very own CDC table, showing the formaldehyde, showing the monkey kidney cells, showing the human diploid cells, showing the polysorbate 80, the detergent that tears up the blood-brain barrier in the gut of these children and destroys them forever. When we start showing these toxins, the aluminum at levels frankly you wouldn't be exposed to anywhere, and they're injecting it by our skin, by our defenses, injecting it directly into the brains of these children by the formulations of these so-called vaccinations. Vaccination is not immunization. Vaccination has to make you immune. None of these vaccines work. That's why the measles epidemic. That's why our epidemic outbreak. That's why the little cluster of measles. That's why the whooping cough in our colleges. This is the vaccinated getting sick, folks. So what does that mean? Hillary Clinton, she got pneumonia and she's fully vaxxed. It means they don't work.
So you're saying like we'd be better off if Michelle Obama, did the inspiration of she's growing carrots in the White House lawn kind of thing. If that was a serious effort for health, I mean, if we got Melania, whatever her name is, Trump, and she's out there in her cute little whatever with her nice legs and pumps out there gardening of grow a vegetable, she'd probably save a lot more than anything else.
Right. Absolutely. If we just start and everybody gets out there and just shows what's in these things. I'll send you that table and you can put it up on the website.
I'm looking for alternatives. I mean, the thing is people are getting sick and it's either they're, they think they should be in perfection all the time, or they got sick from the environment, or sick from their diet, or sick from their lifestyle, or sick from, and they go, yeah, well, I can continue on doing this, just take another pill. But I'm, you know, where is the leadership of their just wanting to emphasize good eating and health? That never comes from the government. It's always, we got to make it legal to GMO of, you're not allowed to even know what's on the package of it, says you don't get to have the information. And I'm going, who the hell are these people? You know, who's doing this? Why is it, there's something topsy-turvy in this. When we come back, you know, there's a gentleman here, one of the activists went to the Vaccine Education Summit here that has finished reading your book, and he wants to, you know, say something. We'll go ahead and get him on here in a little bit, and we'll see what's up. Because I'm interested, you know, in what somebody that's read the book has to say.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
Hey, Ed.
Hi.
Okay, whoa, that's... Okay, count the five for me.
One, two, three, four, five.
There you go. Okay, Dr. Judy, Ed was a gentleman, baseball cap, black beard, long...
long beard, you gave me your book.
Yeah. Yeah. So you recognize that. So you read the book?
Yes.
Okay. When we come back, just, you know, I don't want to take up a whole...
I know, quick.
Yeah, just quick. You know, skip to the end. And then just hold on for a second, let her talk, and us, and you can just be there and ask whatever questions. But the big thing is the impression...
I've only got two things to say. I can say one, she can comment, and the other one, and then I'm done.
Boom. Cool. All right, thanks, Ed. We'll be back in just a little bit. We'll get right to it.
Very good.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with a chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
There's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today.
Yeah, too many crying mamas. You know, this is, bad people got to stay after school, man. I mean, there's something coming, and I can feel from the enough evidence and just the PR value of a lot of the information, there's a wave coming on this issue. And it's always good to have a single. I mean, freedom's the answer, what's the question? But when you can have such a well-documented, they know better, and they, them, those won't leave us alone, and the children kind of thing, I'm like, wow, it's like low-hanging fruit. Well, there's another activist here, very, 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 you know, one of the pinpoint tip-of-spear guys, Ed Vallejo, who's head of the meetup for Ron Paul here for a long time, went to the Vaccine Education Summit, and he got the book Plague, and he was like, you know, he just read it. I wanted to ask Ed, what did you think of the book, Ed?
It was outstanding, and it left me hanging, left us all hanging.
Well, what is the book? I haven't read it. I mean, I know the story, and I've, you know, of course, interviewed Dr. Judy Michalowicz on this. Give me the title, how it starts off, what did you learn from it, what kind of impact do you think it's going to have?
Well, Plague is basically the story of our hero, Dr. Michalowicz, who has gone through hell and knows the truth and has written the truth, and anybody that can crunch the important stuff in here can see the truth, and it's scary shitless. Excuse my language, but that's it, man. I'm scared to death, and I got a lot of questions, and I want to keep it short.
All right, go.
Prior to the understanding that the retroviruses can affect us humans, it was okay. They started using mouse brains in part of the process of testing for all of this stuff. And can you explain a little bit more in detail about the use of mouse brains? And could this be a part of how it's jumped from, you know, animals to man?
Well, yes, Ed, you've got exactly the point of the book. What we discovered is, you know, mouse brains, what they were doing is literally passing, injecting these pathogens into the mouse brains so that the mouse brain and all the biology would attenuate them. And that means make them less lethal. So and then they would grind up, as that beautiful cartoon Ernie sent last week showed, they would grind up the mice and literally inject these, mouse proteins, and pieces and parts of mice into humans. And that's how the mouse retroviruses that were there in their DNA did jump into humans. And that was the big, oh my God, that we discovered in 2009. And by 2011, when it wasn't just this one rather obscure disease, that devastating disease, myalgic encephalomyelitis, which means inflammation of the brains and the muscles. And we just call it chronic fatigue syndrome, which marginalizes all the victims. But it also was a big deal in families with all of these diseases, autism, cancer, lupus, chronic Lyme disease, you name it. It was like, oh my God, we've spread these mouse retroviruses now. We've given them the opportunity to infect humans. We've injected them directly, bypassing the human immune system, which would keep them out and has for millennia, and we injected them directly into our immune compromised, our children who are not yet fully immune functional, and we're crippling them, and we've allowed them to replicate. And now what the book showed was 20 million people by 2011. Our estimates were 6% of America, and they were solid estimates in every study. 6% of the people had evidence of infection, that they're in our DNA, they're not going anywhere, they're passed through generations.
Okay, now is something I need to understand. Now, we have the graphic up that you're talking about. It was, you know, it just reminded me of the Bass-O-Matic, you know, from Saturday Night Live with Dan Aykroyd. Yes. And I'm going, so really, I mean, how are they doing it? Well, they just kind of blended it. I go, really? So we did a graphic of that, and has been used by a lot of people now. But I am wondering, when you're talking about there are pieces and DNA, retroviruses have the ability to go into the cell and insert itself, its genetic material, into our DNA that then becomes part of us. And we're like, you know, literally mouseketeers, man. We're going to look like them and have our own ears or something. I mean, there's some weird stuff going on. You do this enough with enough different, and it's like we're being experimented on. Is it, I mean, has it come to that level?
It is come to that level. You know, what I had hoped with our discoveries of 2009, that everything would come to a screeching halt. But the book goes into my 5 days in jail. So every other chapter of the book talks about, it opens with my arrest, you know, at my home for no reason, you know, my house surrounded, you know, hunted down like a dog and taken out in shackles.
Yeah, let me ask Ed. Ed, I got you there?
Yeah.
You know, in the book, when they describe the go through the process of them, you know, hut, we got to get us some Judy and the FBI, and they're doing, I mean, did you get the impression that it was just to send a message? Was there justification, a reason? It was theater, PR? From an activist standpoint, what'd you see going on?
She was too close to truth to power, because I did my activist thing, okay? After I read her book, then I watched Vaxxed, then I watched the other
Trace
one about
You need to watch that Trace Amounts one. You watch Trace Amounts.
That was it.
Yeah.
Trace Amounts. Then I went to Wikipedia and I looked up XMRV. Okay, that was my second question. As Dr. Mikovits, you're only mentioned basically in there once, and that's under where several negative studies have been conducted with the same PCR primers used in the first investigation. And then the next sentence, they go to disprove that using Heinrich and a few others, which I know about. And why don't you go in? And the last time Wikipedia was updated, it even says on there that the information may be bad due to not being updated in a while. The last time it was updated, it says May 2013, and we both know that May 29th of that same month, that same year, was when Harvey Whittemore was convicted and sent to jail for all of this. Okay, why don't you go in and update the Wikipedia entry?
You know, that's one thing she wanted to talk about. She's saying the Wikipedia thing is kind of manipulative. Help us out with that, Judy. Help us understand the Wikipedia thing.
Numerous people have gone in and tried to update that with the facts. Our paper wasn't a PCR paper. Our paper showed proteins. Our paper showed pictures of viruses that we isolated from dozens of people, not just one, not just. So the name game of this whole thing was to say, oops, the PCR was all wrong. Well, that was figure one.
Wait a minute. See, you guys are, you know, slinging. You see, this is what happens when I read the book. It's like two people talking about a book they, you know, both read. Nobody knows what the hell they're talking about. So this PC, what?
It's a way to look for sequences of viruses. It's just a technique to look for sequences. But
in layman's terms, she did the job right, and she found this, and they gave the job of trying to verify her work to monkeys, and the monkeys couldn't figure out what she did.
They deliberately did it on purpose.
They did it on purpose, and they're lying about it on purpose.
They're just like they did with Andy Wakefield. We did the seminal studies. We did the studies right, and anybody who did them right would come up with the same answer. So they simply made them all go away politically instead of scientifically. They just rode around.
We're out of time. Did you see Helix, the thing by Sci-Fi? It was only two seasons. It's all about XMRVs. It verifies everything that you said. It's scary as crap, and the ending is perfect. I hope you see it. Bye, Ernie.
See you later. Thanks, Ed. Okay, what did he say?
He said, go see Helix. It's all about
XMRVs. XMRVs, right? I have no idea what an XMRV is.
It's a mouse-like virus in humans.
You know, this is...
Mouse retrovirus in humans. That's what XMRV is.
Then say that. It's mouse-o-matic juice.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, say that. Ed is, a layman as I am, you know, if not more so. He's just an activist, kind of one of the guys, and all of a sudden you turned him into a scientist because he read your damn book, you know? And I'm going, no. If Ed goes all, you know, white lab coat on me, you know, then we're screwed, man. I need to get it down on a bumper sticker. I need to know mouse-o-matic, Mises to Pieces in my brain kind of thing or something. I need to understand. Oh, man, hold on. Everybody go to the archive. We're not done yet. We're going to yak it a little bit and get updated on some other stuff. Thanks, Ed Vallejo. Good job, man. Okay, when you go to Wikipedia and they have, because I've had my own Wikipedia, you know, thing. They started the thing on me in 2009, and it's just, nope, too commercial, because all the stuff that I did kind of went back to Freedom's Phoenix or something, and all the staff that was doing it, they won't allow it to be uploaded. They won't? I go, and I just never went back. Now I'm waiting for the decentralized internet. For just exactly this kind of reason, there is so much bias on it, as powerful as I find Wikipedia, because the original intent was just, you know, people could put up and they had, it's a powerful resource, but it's got so politicized because it can. And this is a really good example. That's why we need a decentralized internet for this kind of stuff to get up and it not go away or get altered, or you just go to a different one or something. So
the government actually went to something called Retract Watch and Quack Watch. So the government puts this little blog out where they knew about my cases being dismissed before I did. And it's like, no, they're not dismissed. You know, they're fine. And then 2 weeks later, they're dismissed on some technicality. So to this day, I've never had a hearing. I was arrested falsely. The mugshot was false that was run in the journal Science. I mean, this is what the book's about. The book shows you the media corruption, you know, Science, the journals, the actual journals we publish our papers in are totally corrupt and controlled by the government.
Help me out with the wiki story, though. As you're getting this information comes out, it hasn't been updated since 2013 of whatever month and day. And that's one thing Ed, you know, brought up. He goes, yeah. And that's when they stopped, because right after this, a whole bunch of stuff they don't want you to know happened, it don't get updated. And I'm going,
right. And if
who
people
does that?
Tried to update it and they took it down.
Who does that?
So, the government. They took it down. We kept updating it. And they said, unless it's published showing you were right, you know, they said, oh, the Lipkin study showed you were wrong. No, it didn't. It showed 6% of America was infected with the mouse viruses, just like we showed. It showed that you used the wrong patients, just like they used it did to Dr. Wakefield. It showed corruption in the government. And every time we wrote the story correctly, they even after the book came out in 14. You know, fix it, fix it, fix it. We fixed it. We had people go in there and fixed it, and they took it down. So yeah. We're not going to waste any time on Wikipedia because it's corrupt.
Yeah, I'm telling you, this is, you know, why I'm motivated to do, because I could see this happen on everything. Anything of import, that, you know, that I tell you one thing that really, you know, kind of opened my eyes to how bad, I mean, it didn't surprise me, but it's when they did the Spaceship One, Government Zero sign that we made. When the first astronaut, you would think, certainly libertarians are all excited. All the sci-fi buffs are in there, you know, the Firefly fans kind of thing. You know, you go in and you have a private launch to space. Well, you'd think that would be freaking out America, you know? And what at the time, it was interesting because just a little before that, the United States was criticizing Russia for selling private seats to space. They're going, well, you can't do it. That's like you damn entrepreneurs making money and everything. I mean, I'm going, whoa, what freaking world are we in? When did this happen that the United States is criticizing a communist country for making money on space? I'm going, whoa, what the hell just happened? So when it was Spaceship One, Government Zero, and the astronaut is standing on top of the spacecraft holding that, it went planet-wide, but not in the U.S. And you look any research on that, you have to put in Spaceship One, Government Zero, and an image search, you know, and it'll blow up all over the place. But, you know, it was not every seven-year-old should have known this. I mean, I'm like, why didn't they know this? Why was it this a big deal in second grade? Why was it, you know, because it didn't support the government's approved sanction whatever story of, you know, they go to space kind of thing. But then here comes Elon Musk, we're going to Mars. There's a new movie coming out, The Space Between Us, of a kid born on Mars, the first one, he wants to come back, and my kids are all excited, they want to see it, you know, and all my grandkids. And I'm going, this mind manipulation, this PR, this control of information is so important for them to be able, those won't leave us alone, to maintain their control and existence and influence through governments and all this collectivized everything. So the answer is decentralization. Decentralization of information. Decentralize your book, your activities. But when you use that and you get a crowd and everybody's like, yeah, look at this, we all know. Then you come together to go to the CDC and ask for Congress to do. I'm like, you know, I see that as, you know, I'm glad you're doing it. I just don't want the focus to be lost that if your goal is to get Congress or they'll give it to you. Oh, yeah, see, we had the hearing. You'll get Kennedy come out. What's which Kennedy is he? What's his name?
Robert F.
Okay.
Jr.
Okay, so Robert Kennedy Jr., he gave a really good speech on this. I saw that, you know, he's out. Where's he been lately?
Right, same thing, fighting in the trenches.
I'm for when it becomes general opinion, and that's why I think pharma is spending enormous amounts of money and doing a lot of what they're doing and going federal. They're losing the battle, but they have so many resources and so much at their disposal, and so much FBI go kick in the door. I'm wondering What you were chart the FBI agents themselves that did the raid, I'm wondering if you could even find out who they were, or the department or the agency.
Oh,
the,
we've and you got give them the all book. Of that.
Well, give them the book. Say, look what you were doing, you scumbag. You're a freaking stormtrooper for what was even the reason. On the warrant, on the paper for them to do this and seize everything, it said, we got to go attack Judy, Dr. Judy, because what?
She's a fugitive from justice.
In what way?
I don't know. There never was a crime. There, I mean, they just made it
up. So it says
up.
On there, fugitive from justice, Dr. Judy.
Correct.
Means we go get to take her hard drive.
Correct. Go take everything out of her house. She stole it. So I stole my own brain was basically my crime. That's what the book said.
That you were, because you were G.I. Jane. You were government issue Jane.
They had to get those data, just like in the movie Vax. What was it that they told all the CDC people to do? Burn the data. They had a data burning party so nobody would ever know the truth. Because once you play stupid statistic games and manipulate it, then you can cover up the truth. So the person that had the truth in papers, in our hard drives, in our computer, was me, you know, and Frank Grassetti. And both of us refused to throw it away. And so they came and they jailed me. They said, fine, we'll take it from you and we will fabricate that you stole it.
Did you have backup copies? Did you have it somewhere else? Did they get it all?
They got it all.
You know, that's a lesson learned for everybody right now, which is why decentralized internet, when this stuff goes up, it never goes away. You can't delete it. See,
well,
this is
the good news. The good news is that there were a number of patients, a number of the victims of the plague of corruption who actually did take the screenshots. We actually have a good amount of it that is not gone forever, that is memorialized in screenshots.
Boom.
So you're absolutely
you give
right.
me the
you
file. Give, you give me the file. You tell me where to the download. I put it on my server, making the link available to, and I'm there. Done. That's what I do. Done. Next.
Great. I'll send it all to you. It's all in court documents. We filed whistleblower documents.
Boom.
We gave hard drives to the FBI with every bit of the corruption, and that's what I'm going to show this weekend. I'm going to show you the quotes from Tony Fauci and Ian Lipkin saying,
okay.
"Oh yeah, we know."
Okay,
wait.
Tony Fauci, Ian Lipkin. Who are they? Are they Marvel comic book heroes? What?
Right. Tony Fauci is the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. He's the guy that controls all of the money. All of the money.
And has he worked for pharma or going to?
He's making a lot of money from pharma. He's got all the patents on all of these crap-ass vaccines. Oh, yeah, they're all getting the patents. See, the Bayh-Dole Act of 1986 gave government workers the right to patent and get paid on patents. So all of these mandates are dropping this money directly into their pocket.
Wait. So I got a guy in charge of an area of the government that has
Correct.
Patents on drugs that the government is mandating that they use.
And vaccines. Yep.
Damn.
Yep. And people don't know.
You know, there are so many things. You guys need a PR person to kind of skip to the end and, you know, champion the, you know, some of these things. Because I talk to you guys and I'm going, you know, there's some highlight and it'll go on. And all of a sudden, like Ed was doing, they start talking about, you know, acronyms for. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? When you lead off with things like the guy in charge of the money, the promoting this has the patents on the things that the government is mandating. That's like bad. Yep, next thing. The guy that, I mean, you know, I could, the five or six things I've heard, I could fill 20 minutes of a speech just on freaking what the hell just happened, blow the audience away things, because it's just experience in this. I know what things make me go, damn. You know, damn.
Well, that's why Peter and Tony Marie contacted you to talk to me, because they didn't understand it for a couple of years because of the way I talk. But you're right, I'm naive. I've been a scientist my whole life.
Well, they have resources. They travel the world. They got doctors that are, you know, even diagnoses doctors to help kind of doing. And this is stuff that they've been battling all the day. And I'm just, you know, I could have explained it in, you know, in 5 minutes. I go, let me tell you what's going on. You know, the one thing that really, it was a popular show. I got a lot of feedback on the last one we did on understanding retroviruses. And,
cool.
And that was, we had James Lyon Weiler on just last week, Friday. We did like a full 3-hour walk at beginning to end. Now, his organization, IPAC, you know, is scientists that really want to know what the hell is going on, people. What's your view on that? I wanted to have, he wants me to, you know, promote and endorse and kind of, you know, go take a look at. And we need private scientists outside of the sphere of they're paid by pharma kind of thing, which I'm definitely for that. I want to have him on again, discuss, ask some pointed questions, and see if I use some airtime to help promote that. What's your thought on what they're doing?
I think it's great. I mean, we need to take back the science of this country. And in fact, we've been working with a number of groups. Some, you know, people came to us, Red Plague, and they're scientists. And that's why it's scientifically complicated, because they came to us and said, okay, we're independently wealthy and we want to do something. We want to make the treatments. We want to do the diagnoses. See, there, it's all totally illegal for anybody to do this. This was the whole point of my mugshot, of arresting me, of showing what would happen if an honest scientist dared to go there again.
You know, see, it gets to the point to where if you're not endorsed by the government of perpetuating their crap, it's like kudos. It's like you get stripes by, first you got to have, it's like an activist, you know, if you don't have a mugshot, you didn't do it right. I mean, you know, something. So I'm just, it's not a stain anymore. It's kind of like, you know, Judy's got credentials because she spoke truth to power, because she was challenging this, because she, you know, said hell no. And in the first hour, Lawrence Reed, no, it was second hour, Lawrence Reed from Foundation for Economic Education, FEE, been around for decades, and he was inspired by them in the 60s as a young man, 14 years old, when in the, I think it was the late 60s, when the Russians rolled the tanks into Czechoslovakia. Well, he, you know, FEE had a bunch of books on one and inspired him, and later he went on and he just wrote a book. He's the head of FEE now, and which is one of the top, you know, freedom-oriented websites on the, in the world, and been around for a long time, lots of publications, lots of understanding. And he wrote a book about 40 of the most influential, freedom-oriented, kind of courageous, you know, advance-the-ball-forward people. And they all had these traits of what you've been doing. So, I like, you can make it in volume 2. I'll make sure he knows about you. So, this is a an inspiration for a lot of people, and I got to give props. Maybe I hear him coughing in the background. Is that your husband?
Yeah.
You know, you always got to give props to the spouse that allows this stuff to happen. You know?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the you know, Plague, the book talks about, you know, the husband and how much he suffered. And of course, that's how they do it. They try to tear about your family. They take away everything you own. They try to make you distrust each other. They you know, they threaten you with further incarceration unless you file bankruptcy, which is what happened to me. The bankruptcy was totally fraud, and I had a perfect credit score. So it's either that or go back to prison. And this time you go to Nevada. And hey, by the way, we got OJ, so we can get anybody. You know, and that's what they tell you. Wow. And this is your federal government. This is your FBI. This is, you know, this isn't some punk Harvey Whittemore. This is the top of the whole.
Well, have you gotten any kind of feedback from your story or the book or anything from people in law enforcement or some of the prosecutors or even some of the FBI agents that were kicking in the door because it said go get whatever, they're just Hydra. They, you know, no, hell, Hydra, we just follow orders, yeah, you know.
They can't say anything because that's the whole corruption of the Ninth Circuit Court in the United States. It was the federal courts. It was the highest level of the Department of Justice, just like this crap with Hillary Clinton not being convicted. It's the we don't care what the Constitution says. This is we're going after her because if this information gets out, you know, we're done.
Because they can. Because they can.
Because they can. Because right. they can. That's exactly right.
Okay, so this weekend is going to be, you know, kind of like the Education Summit, just a lot of the, you know, anti
Yeah, much more political. So you're teaching me what I want to say this weekend. I haven't decided, but, you know, I'm going to, for the first time in a long time, steer away from the viruses with the exception of your cartoon, if I may.
Yeah, no. See, this is why it was inspired. I didn't even have it done. It was our graphic artist's father that asked her to do it. Because he's like,
I'd love to show it this weekend.
Stop. Be my guest.
Everything simple. Simplifying the whole story is this is what we found.
Okay. Now, this is the I tell you one thing that if you were to do, I mean, I'll give you 30 seconds, and this is like, you know, blew me away. The explanation of a retrovirus. There are viruses that have full DNA that use the resources of the cell to replicate itself, and it goes out and infects more. A retrovirus doesn't have DNA as RNA, a single strand that it reads using the resources of the cell to make its own DNA that is then unzipped DNA of your own nucleus and inserts itself into and makes you a different species. It makes you something else. I'm going, nobody. I mean, I got 15 gazillion sci-fi movies that, you know, are all about this very thing, and they never focus on how that's done. All of a sudden, all of the Marvel Comics original series of Netflix, you know, makes sense with, you know, Luke Cage, man, I'm impenetrable, and I'm so-and-so, I can jump high, and I'm Daredevil, I can, you know, got chemicalized of the virus of a spider bite of the blah, blah. I mean, it goes, all this stuff becomes possible now, and you can see how they can do it, and wealthy, rich individuals, if they had the incentive to live longer, to live forever, how would they do this? They need a mass, big, giant guinea pig, billion people population to put dump a bunch of retro crap in there and see what works and doesn't, and they can pick. And we're, you know, we're perpetuating whatever the hell it is they want at the expense of the rights of the individual. Boom. You know, these are this fundamental concept of understanding that we're just lab rats, and there's obvious evidence of this and how they do it. I spent an hour or more just trying to understand retroviruses, and it came down to it just creates its own DNA that becomes part of your DNA. Then you have your immune system.
And the factory. You need the factory as well.
Well, it creates the factory, and then it creates more of them to make more factories. But the point is that then your body sees that as a damaged cell. That's where the autoimmune stuff starts coming in. Okay, let's go ahead and talk about Rhea. You know, what have you got that protocol? Right. What's the name of that? I want to get this down. What is the name of that fungus in Africa that they were eating that kind of protected them against this stuff?
There's one called Baicalin, B-A-I-C-A-L-I-N.
Okay, B-A-I.
C-A-L-I-N.
I-N, Baicalin. Okay.
And then and that's from Scutellaria, S-C-U-T-E-L-A-R-I-A. And that's all on our I'll get those papers for her before she gets to the naturopath. And then there's one called
Now these are funguses.
Well, they're actually metabolites, so they're actually antifungal and antimicrobial, and it's actually a natural way to keep the infection from taking. So the idea is, you know, if you're chewing these plants, even if you get infected, it can't insert itself into the DNA, and your immune system can clear it and take care of it.
And so if you are infected, it stops the reproduction part of keep going, whatever.
Right. Correct.
Okay. Now
correct.
You said it's antifungal, antimicrobial. What? You said something else.
Just antiretroviral. It's an immune modulator. So all of these things fix your immune system, these natural products, in a way that you can prevent from dying. So in the whole movie, you know, when they're finding out who the genetically strong are, who naturally doesn't get sick. Then when they find that out, then they use that plant, and that's what we do. And that's what I did. I developed drugs to say, okay, this is how you don't get sick from HIV. Okay, this is how you don't get sick from all of these things.
So is this we're not buying Bakelin. It's what? I'm licking a rock.
Buy Bakelin, or you can buy Scutellaria. We know the company, it's called liftmode.com, that makes Bakelin, and you have to make it clean. You have to make sure there's no heavy metals in it. And so we've looked at the various places, and Amazon has it too. And then there's another drug called Cystis. I'm just going to forward this to you along with the paper by email, because I'm just writing it down.
Liftmode.com, and this is energizing, mood lifting, aphrodisiac, health promoting. So it's, you know, natural whatever here. It's an ancient Chinese secret herb on the shelf online thing. Right. Okay.
And we did, but we did work with it. And so we did work with it back in the 90s when we first came and saw HIV killing all these young men. We said, okay, we have to do something. And we went through natural products and we looked and we said, okay. And we just screened a bunch of them. And this one came up as having great anti-HIV properties. And now we know it works against the mouse virus, retroviruses too. So it works against a lot of families. We call it broad spectrum.
So it's a RNA retrovirus inhibiting uptake, transverting, whatever the thing.
Right. Yeah, it's just a natural, you know, it's the way our environment has protected people from having these viruses jump in them all, you know, for millennia. And so this is, and one of the ones, the paper I'm sending you right now on the new paper, this thing called Cystis Icinus. And so I'm just doing that for you right now, and I'm going to email it to you. This paper shows that it works on filoviruses. Well, what the hell is that? Well, it's the family of viruses that Zika and West Nile come from. They're not retroviruses, but here you can get another type of RNA virus that's also, hurting people. And so, but with these two natural products, it's going to really help heal your daughter's guts. They're safe. They're natural. You use them sublingual in oils and things like that, and the way they're from. And they're going to silence those viruses so that she can replicate her immune cells with normal viruses and without those viruses making those cells into factories.
Okay. So this is how expensive are these? All right, for Scutellaria, it's what, a plant, a grass, a mineral? What is it?
It's a plant.
Okay, is it? What does it look like? I mean, what am I looking at here? And farmed out of Malaysia or something. I mean, I can pull it up here.
Mostly China.
Ancient Chinese secret. I wasn't far off. Okay. So
let's see. So Scutellaria bakelinus is the one we use, and it's basically called Chinese skull cap. Chinese skull cap is what it's called. So if you look up Scutellaria bakelinus, I'll just send you to the Wikipedia page. See, Wikipedia is useful, and there are various formulations that work and are helpful. And we've tried them and we've vetted them, and with different combinations of things, these can really help.
Okay, Bakelin powder on lift mode, 95% pure, 1788 for a 50 gram that lasts how long?
Months. So think about all the money you've spent on your daughter.
No, I haven't. She spent tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, it's amazing.
I mean, yeah, for $17. And all you have to do is put this in a high quality coconut oil, and You know, it doesn't taste wonderful. It tastes sort of like baking powder or something. It doesn't taste like anything.
Okay, here's a good thing. I want to bring this up. I'm going to read the thing on this, and I'll make my point, all right? Okay. Bakelin is a polyphenol flavonoid, whatever that means, naturally extracted from Scutellaria. Okay, skullcap, this Chinese skullcap thing. Yeah. Okay, so Scutellaria is the base plant, and Bakelin is the product of that.
The compound.
Okay, compound with what?
It's the natural product. So there are a lot of different things in this plant, and some of them are toxic. So when we were in the lab back in the 80s, we isolated a lot of compounds, and we looked at the one that inhibited the virus, and it turned out to be the Bakelin. That's why.
Okay, so the Bakelin is derived from the Scutellaria.
Right.
Okay, you got to share these things with us. Okay. So Bakelin is what is derived from the Scutellaria plant, which is the Chinese skullcap stuff. And you can buy the Bakelin 1788, put it in the high quality coconut oil and those however it says under your tongue of whatever. Okay,
it's going to help sleep. It's going to help you be not as anxiety driven. It's going to start healing your stomach, your gut.
Let me go ahead and make my point here. You'll see where I'm going with this. It has numerous healthful properties, including anti-inflammatory, calming, sleep-promoting benefits, contained in plants which have been used for centuries in traditional medicine, ancient Chinese secret. This product is 50 grams, 1.76 ounces of pure, naturally extracted Bakelin in a transparent, reclosable plastic jar. And with an integrated safety seal and shrink band, I'd rather be glass because I'm sick of plastic. Anyway, also included are copies of the certificate of analysis of the individual Bakelin batch and a micro measuring scoop. More information about. Okay, so they're like, hey man, this certificate of this is what we, this isn't, Fred's backyard thing. This is our, we're doing whatever. Okay, now this is my point. A lot of these things don't go, and I mentioned something when you were talking about the cleaning of the blood supply. And I'm going, well, how do they do that? I don't know. It's electromagnetic. It's ultraviolet. Whatever the hell they do. And I was talking to my daughter, and I said, I think I said something to you about it. I go, I remember them using electromagnetics back in Tesla days, man, the 1800s, and electricity, they're starting to have some success in stopping illnesses and so on, getting rid of different pathogens using electricity. And they would just put these magnetic fields on their arms, and as the blood flow would go through, it would take out a lot of things. The American Medical Association freaked out, went after these guys and did the Dr. Judy Mikovits, kick you in the teeth thing because it was making people healthy. And I'm going, there's something to that, because when you said to clean the blood supply, well, they're just using the modern day version of this kind of stuff. So I'm going, she went to a Pinterest seminar or a convention where you had like 40 vendors out in a Pinterest thing here in the valley. It was just some, how do I turn, pallets into, money or something. I don't know whatever they do. So they went there, and there was someone there selling these machines. So she got their pamphlet, and it said the same thing like this. It helps with inflammation of this and inflammation and inflammation. What I'm finding out is that inflammation is a telltale sign of a lot of these problems, but they never say how it stops the inflammation. This is what it does, but they can't make any claim of the here comes the guys kicking in the door thing. But the cause of the inflammation is a lot of the retroviruses or the different pathogens or whatever the hell it is that you're cleaning out. That is what's getting rid of the inflammation, is the base holistic soul primary at the bottom of the food chain thing that stops that, because you understand what the inflammation is from.
Correct.
But then say
and,
that.
And so but you can't say that or you end up like me. So why your daughter's in a good place, and what we do in Mar Consulting, what we Mikovits and Rossetti are doing, is we're just telling people how to get well. And we make sure, that certificate of analysis is very important, because it can't have heavy metals and it can't have any of the things that'll kill you, because that's where my chemistry brain, that's where the natural products part of what you always read, is that's what I did my whole life. So I look at the products and I vet the products and we try them and we make sure they have an analysis and they're clear. They've been cleaned from all of any potential heavy metals or anything that'll kill your daughter, because she doesn't have 40 years of experience and a degree. She just wants to get helped and go on living with her life.
Tell me about Lift Mode. Who are these people? How do you hook up with them?
Company. It's a company in Chicago, and I just when I just went back to, because the FDA won't approve. I've been working with a company for 20 years, and we put Bakelin in a drug to cure cancer and cure AIDS and cure all of this stuff, along with four other things. And the FDA won't approve it, of course, because it would cure everything at less than $200 a month, and they don't.
It would reduce my influence to buy it or to advocate it if it got FDA approval. That's how bad it is. I don't give a crap what they say.
Correct. So all I did was when all of this happened to me and I realized what they were doing and that our drug would never get approved, and I was trying to work the right way through a pharmaceutical company, a biotech company, and I thought the people are just going to die and so am I. So I just went looking for sources of the compounds that I know work. So, and Lift Mode came up as a high quality, inexpensive. We tried it worked. People started sleeping through the night with refreshing sleep. This is what your daughter said she doesn't ever get. So when, and one patient, after 1 month of doing this stuff, one patient wrote me and said, I can't believe it. I had forgotten for 26 years, I had forgotten what a good night's sleep is, where you wake up and you say, let's take on the world, instead of, I got to get more sleep. I got to get more sleep. I got to get more sleep. So what we found out is the Bakelin interacts with one of the key pathways where sleep heals you. And we didn't know any of that in 1980 when we found it. All we found is that's how it's healing. So one of the places these viruses jump is into your brain, and they make you anxious. They make you have anxiety. They make you have depression, you know, and it's just the hot spots for where the toxicity is, for making us not human. Think about what autism is. It's not human. You can't communicate. You don't have empathy. You start shooting up people because you don't realize what pain is. This is how it's really changing our species.
Well, it's back ordered now. I can't even order it. What the hell?
I know. We've been at it for about a year. Don't worry, I can get it for.
Well, get me, because I'm ready to buy and do and kind of try and whatever, man. This rock and roll. You're talking to my oldest daughter here, and I'm doing what I can to help you and promote and doing whatever. You know, hook me up.
Always. No problem. Always. You know, so this is what I do. So I decided I couldn't do anything else. I would just help people and I wouldn't charge them. We wouldn't charge them. And so I make most of my money. If any, I don't make much money, but any money that I make in vaccine court, trying to show the courts how people are getting injured. And then on the other side, I'm trying to help the people who are injured, like your daughter, and say, there are things we can do to really improve the quality of her life for
much money. What's the shelf life on this stuff? You can buy enough to last you a generation? I mean, what?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so now it's holds its potency, I guess. Now, is there some other thing I should look up on this site or what?
I sent you one called Cistus, C-I-S. It's not on that site, but it's another compound. So you should have gotten an email. I sent it to Donna, producer. Right. And it's one called Cistus Icanus. And it's another natural product, and it works in HIV, and it works in the Zikas and the West Niles and all the other viruses. And that product, in combination, it acts by a different mechanism with the Bakelin. To a double whammy, a patient over in Germany said her daughter could recall French again because her daughter was so sick that her mind was. And she said, Judy, this one really works, and it just got published. So we went and vetted it, and we're looking for sources for it right now. When I say we, it's the people that work with me all have victims like your daughter. So we spend
all. Okay, now
that's
another thing I wanted to kind of get. When you're doing this and you have people going out and they're, you know, searching for these different compounds and bringing it together, there's somebody not happy you're doing that, I would imagine.
Well, probably the FDA. I mean, that's why it's a problem, because, you know, that's why I don't advertise companies and things like that on the radio, because we don't want to put them in harm's way. But people get the message because Bakelin's sold out.
I guess so, because I'm like, you know, freaking, I'm ready to, you know, damn it. All right. Damn. All right, well, this is, well, you know, hook me up and we'll get taken care. Because this is, see, the motivation for me helping with this and the way, and this is such a perfect neon flashing example of why, you know, communication and the internet and privacy and encryption and being able to use cryptocurrencies and all, it bypasses all their control mechanisms. Because I've seen this before. There was you ever heard of you heard of it called Operation Choke Point, you know, done by the government. Did you ever hear of that? Operation Choke Point was when they shut down the bank accounts of different gun manufacturers and porn stars. And I guess they figured that, you know, I don't know what the hell, you know, porn actresses and actors had to do with guns, but they put them in the same thing, and they said it's called Operation Choke Point. You look it up, you know, wiki, whatever, and you'll get it. But last few years, what happened was the government targeted certain businesses through their bank accounts. They just said, you know, we target these guys in the bank. Yeah, can't have a bank account. Why? Because you're low-hanging fruit, according to the man, which means what? Well, we don't like that you're a porn actress, and we don't like that you manufacture guns. You don't get access. They closed their access to all their credit card processing. So one of the gun manufacturers here in Scottsdale, they had, you know, like, I don't know, you know, $100,000, whatever it was, that was seized or just held in delay because you don't have processing anymore. Then Cody Wilson, that did the 3D gun printing thing, he has a thing called a ghost gunner that makes gun parts, whatever. The point was, is they were able to control businesses like drugs, like farm, you know, these natural healing, like, you know, supplements and all that, because they can.
Because they can.
So I'm just going.
Think about on TV when we're talking that we don't see anything about vaccines. Think about how on TV the nightly news says, oh, somebody did a look and we went to all these supplements. We went to GNC and we found all these supplements are bad or it's not in the bottle. Don't take these things. They're going to kill you.
Well, they're probably right. You know, a lot of these guys are just, you know, it's crap. And of course, they'll, you know, seed the news with some legitimate or somebody, you know, got a bunch of fillers or some crap. But when you do have, like you, actually, this is why I'm encouraged to support things like what James Lyons Weiler's doing, is because you have a lab that I can actually go, it's what they said it was, and it doesn't have a bunch of crap. Oh, my God. So I'm going, okay. That's why we need, as crowdsourcing, as decentralized right. supporters of right. science, that we exactly. as a people need to do it. Because I'm
that's
not
right.
going to trust any of these freaking sons of bitch. Ooh, get some.
Yeah. And there are a number of people who've come along, like James, Dr. Weiler has made us part of that Institute of Pure and Applied Knowledge. So, and then we're looking for money and to crowdsource and to get money and to fund these things. And we've also got, as I said, a couple of very independently wealthy people who read my book, who know the truth. And so they're going to put a lab together. So the labs are being put together, oh, so silently, many of them on Indian reservations. Another
good target. Score. Freaking A. We did that, too, for a yep, project yep. that we did, a gun thing, just to piss off Joe Arpaio.
But, right.
You know, so it's just safe. Second Amendment for everyone. We had safe storage. You know, California, they were taking right. away their guns, and we said, no, we'll yep. provide safe storage. Well, Sheriff Arpaio called, oh, where do you got the safe bunker? You go, nah, it's just a storage thing on the Native reservation over here in Scottsdale, and don't worry right. about it. You don't have jurisdiction. It's on sovereign land. What? Well, I'm going, hey, man, you're getting a little upset there. What's your problem, you know? So this, yeah. so I understand the concept. See, these are the kind of things that I want to get involved in on this, and my big motivation is, of course, I love my daughter. And I don't want to see her, you know, suffering. And she's always tired. I mean, she functions as a mom. She does, but it's so much effort on her, and it's not the same daughter that it's always like these commercials. Are you at home and you just don't feel like going to the kids' game or the whatever and so on and so on? And she makes the effort, but I can tell that if we could show just a little bit of a glimmer of improvement, of hope, of it starts to have an impact with these days. So I'm like, you cannot get them to me fast enough, okay?
Yep.
So
yep.
We cure my daughter. Oh, man, am I going to be? I'm one of those, you know, who adds value to the effort? Well, sometimes you need somebody that's a good megaphone. And I'm just, let me show you how to megaphone. So this is, we're just getting started here. Help me out, and I can megaphone the crap out of it.
Yep, that's what, you know, obviously I'd help her anyway, but I appreciate if we can help her, how many more we can help.
Right, no, that's, I hold my, that's why I'm not, you know, I'm willing to give time to IPAC on my show. I have built up a lot of commercial time on like 160 other stations on network syndicated shows of what I'm just waiting for when we're doing another project or so. But I'll make this part of that and we'll, you know, push this. But it doesn't work as well if I don't have a personal story of, it's not just an endorsement, it's a testimonial. And I need that. I want that. And of course, I benefit in my daughter. But you know, I'm telling you, man. I like the ad. And you know, give me a help me help you help me help you, man. I'm all over it. Oh, I think I lost her.
See if that works better.
Yeah, no, I'll let you go. I was just on a rant.
I appreciate your rant, and I'm saying, yeah.
Okay, I want to
know how. That's, you know, there are so many people whose families are affected, and they're so much worse than your daughter, and that's why I can really encourage her because it's only been a few years, and I can hear what the challenges the son will face. And so we want to fix that, too.
On it. All right. Well, I won't be hammering the crap out of you. I know you're busy with Atlanta and all this kind of stuff. But
I have a law case due today, so I have to get back to the little girl they killed with HPV vaccine is what I'm writing. Why? And they said, it had nothing to do with her death. She would have died anyway. Natural causes at 18? Come on.
She died anyway of what?
She died of a seizure.
I know, but they were saying that it
caused the seizures, by the Gardasil vaccine.
I know, but they said it was because of what?
They said she was born with a seizure disorder in her family, and that was the natural progression. She would have died anyway.
Oh, how did they come to that seizure? What?
Yeah, well, right, her grandfather had seizures. It's horrible.
No, guys.
I'm going to get there. Don't worry. I'm going to do everything I can to put the science by it. And so as long as we keep fighting in the courts.
All right, Judy, I'll let you get at it. Thank you very much for another great show, Ernie. And let's stay on it.
Okay, we'll stay on it. Thanks, Ernie. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.